Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. Only four pitchers in baseball have 12 wins on the season as MLB teams reach the 100-game mark. One of them is Reds righty Chase Burns. Cincinnati's 23-year-old All-Star struck out six in five innings of work last night in Seattle to power the Red Legs to a 14-2 win over the Mariners. Cincinnati's 15-4 when Burns toes the rubber. Also helps when Ellie De La Cruz hits a leadoff home run. The Reds can take the Seattle series with a win this afternoon at 3:40. Last night in Cleveland, the Guardians beat the Twins 5-2. 23-year-old outfielder Khalil Watson made the game-clinching catch slamming into the right field wall in the ninth. Cleveland hosts Minnesota tonight at 6:40. Guardians are currently tied with the White Sox for the top spot in the AL Central. Baseball's trade deadline is Monday, August 3rd at 6 o'clock. This update sponsored by BMI Federal Credit Union. Take a vacation from high interest rates with special rates on balance transfers at BMI Federal Credit Union. BMIFCU.org/consolidate.
Your morning just got more interesting. Distilled and barrel-picked for your listening pleasure. Bo Bishop, a local sports media legend. What William T. Sherman was to the Union Army, he is to Northern College football. A husband, a father, and middling youth sports coach. He's friends with Central Ohio sporting royalty.
I'm talking to Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjorken. Coach Day walking on with us right now. Good to see you, buddy.
Good buddy, Austin Ward.
My good buddy, Tim May, the Tim May Show.
The great Doug Lamery is joining us.
Hi, everybody. Tom Tabari here.
Oh, Reese came in, and he handed me papers.
Yeah,
and then
it's a rundown.
And then he said, you see that button? That's the only button you need to worry about. Don't touch. There's 8,000 buttons in front of me.
Oh,
I didn't know what he was talking about.
The one that says on.
We blew the budget on this imaging, and only two guys answered our ad on Craigslist. Ryan Baker and Eric Reeser. Act accordingly. You're now listening to Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
You know, for all the belly aching I did yesterday about the summer and the heat and the explosive diarrhea, Mother Nature gave us a pretty great first Friday. A crisp fall morning.
It was a fall morning.
That Joshua, Ryan Baker, Eric Reeser, I think have us feeling football. One of the things that I say a lot during the summer is not to wish it away. But waking up today, walking the dog around the block, I thought, all right, maybe we get to September 5th a little quicker.
I've been wishing.
Since when?
Mm.
Like, where was the point you were like, all right, summer, let's be done with you.
4th of July.
Okay.
That was a turning point for me.
Was it before or after the actual celebration?
Right after.
Okay. Yep. That makes sense. Because I know you and Baker weren't involved in the international sporting competition, had any interest in that was going on throughout the month of July. But as we kind of look towards next week and the start of August, yeah, that you're in it. You already kind of feel it, and it's doubly so when you're doing the walk around the block in the crisp fall air.
Oh, yeah.
It's wonderful, but you're also kind of thinking in the back of your head, all right, we've got Ball State and Ohio State.
That's it.
September 5th at 12:30. We have a extremely busy show today, fully loaded. This first Friday is going to be kind of nuts. It'll be noon before you know it. We've got Miami, a lot of Miami chatter today. The U is one of our 20 most interesting programs, the one we're going to cover today. People are saying, Joshua, the U might be back.
That's what they say.
Is this the year Mario Cristobal can win the title tilt? They made it last year. Obviously lost to Indiana, but do a big old Miami conversation at 11 o'clock. Alex Dono is the host of the Locked On Canes podcast. He'll join us at 11:30. The ACC had their media days last week. They were part of a lot of poaching conversations. Secession has been the word this week from the SEC in their media days. I wonder if there's going to be a similar secession sermon sung next week at Big Ten Media Days. Jake Trotter covers all things college football for the Worldwide Leader. He'll join us at 10:30, and plenty of discussion, I think, will be had with Jake that we're probably also going to have with Alex, because along with his conversations on the Locked On Canes podcast, he's in the Locked On ACC podcast. For a summer where not a boot has met the ball, we've been busy as hell in college football.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to heat up a little bit today, as at 5:30, you've got the commitment of one David Gabriel George, the five-star running back from Tennessee. He's a Canadian native. Will announce at 5:30 on CBS Sports YouTube channel. And Joshua, one of my passions in life is commercial production. And as I was working on that last night, commercials for this fine station and several others, I heard Jeremy Birmingham on with Brandon Beam and Austin Ward on the Buckeye Show, talking about the recruitment process, the NIL negotiations for the five-star running back from Tennessee that many think will be the first million-dollar running back in the name, image, and likeness era, where Tennessee's got all of these offers that they've put in front of him relative to Ohio State, who's probably Ohio State fans, I don't want to say expect an orange hat to be put on his head for him to don the Volunteers cap, because anything could happen between now and 5:30. You never know at the last minute what kind of offer might come in, but the crystal balls are all kind of showing up Tennessee for David Gabriel George.
Sure.
With the things that he's been offered, I sit back and it's easy again for me to say with Buckeye blinders on, I'm okay with Ohio State not matching this offer for offer, dollar for dollar.
I mean, the numbers that have come out is essentially $2 million a year for 3 years at Tennessee and $1 million a year for three at Ohio State, allegedly, right? These are all rumors, sourcing, whatever the case is. We won't know the exact numbers. If they're that far apart, you stick to your guns, right? Like, this is not one where you get into a bidding war. If you felt like you were a couple hundred thousand away, then maybe you start to up the ante a little bit, sure, sweeten the pot. But clearly, Ohio State and Tennessee have completely different values on this guy and ultimately the impact that they will have on the program. I don't think there's going to be one Ohio State fan that if he goes to Tennessee, even if he's a great player for him, is going to be like, that was the hinge point. That's the reason this program at Ohio State hasn't been able to do this, this, or this. I don't think that anybody's going to end up saying that. And it seems like Tennessee feels like, well, if he goes to Ohio State, we're going to miss a huge opportunity to become whatever we want to be as a program. So I would start there. The other benefits and perks that are being thrown in to me feel super insane. I know in this NIL world, you got to get creative in order to entice guys. If I'm paying you $2 million a year, I'm not paying for your mom and dad to fly to games.
So that's one of the asks reportedly.
It's just not illegal. By the way, according to Byrne, like what's going on there with some of that stuff?
What's illegal?
For sure.
Right. If it's not enforceable, then it's legal, right? Like, so I get what they're doing, but like just off of principle, figure it out. Like you'll have plenty of money to be able to travel them however you see fit. We're not going to get into that game, and some schools are willing to do that. It's perfectly fine. Ohio State has made decisions on how they want to approach this.
So I have always applauded Ohio State in their view, in the way they've handled recruiting, transfer portal, NIL in this, where they're not overpaying for guys. They're going to give them a fair offer, but if what these guys want is money, that's number one. That's usually not what Ohio State is looking at. I'm a little torn on this, though, JP, because Ohio State has identified this guy as the running back they wanted so much that they bowed out of recruiting someone like Savion Hyder last year, who committed to Michigan. And then I know he decommitted. I don't know if is going to end up there or not, but with everything that happened with Sharon Moore and whatnot, he wasn't going to go there. So Ohio State has made this guy a priority. So that tells me that this guy is really, really good. And it sounds like maybe some of these perks that you're talking about, JP, are more than the money in all of this, because it sounds like Ohio State offered him, while it wasn't the $2 million a year supposedly for 3 years that Tennessee has supposedly offered, it sounds like what Ohio State offered was more than what Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins made combined their final year at Ohio State. So
Buckeyes offer believed to be for $3 million over 3 years.
Right.
Tennessee's nearly $6 million over 3 years.
Yeah.
So that's a chasm.
No, it is.
That's $1 million. That's $1 million whole dollars.
Yeah. And like, to your point, certainly he was a priority, but I think you hired a whole bunch of people in that building to work specifically on these cases.
Yeah.
They look at high school prospects and they assign a dollar figure to that within the infrastructure of, this is what we have to spend on a roster on an annual basis. They do the same thing with transfer guys. And even if he's a priority, if somebody wants to pay two times what you think is the value of a player, I don't think you say, well, we made him a priority, so we just got to throw good money after bad. Like, I don't think that's where they're at as a program. And I appreciate it, right? Because the way that I look, maybe this is naive in the new age, but the way that I look at it, I don't know, there's probably going to be a guy in the portal in a couple of years, probably going to be another high schooler in a year or two that you're going to look at and say, okay, we can make do with this guy. I think you're going to build a good enough a roster everywhere else to where, I'm not going to say it's plug and play necessarily, but you get an Ohio State caliber running back in there, you're going to feel pretty good about the run game. So all that to say, I get it, and it's probably going to be disappointing when he ends up committing to Tennessee. But I feel like this is the day and age where you got to stand on decisions. And some programs have decided that they will pay out of desperation. And Ohio State has made a decision that they are sticking to their philosophy when it comes to roster building in terms of what NIL packages look like. And by the way, I don't think it would be acceptable. Bo Jackson, that thing got really weird this offseason. He wanted some more money, felt like he earned it. That thing got a little bit weird.
Which I agree with.
You know, they gave him the raise because he had earned the raise.
Yes.
Jeremiah earned the raise. We also watched guys walk out of this program during the offseason because they didn't feel like they were getting the raise that they wanted. Ohio State said they didn't earn it. So to go out there, and they've already offered a high schooler more than they paid two running backs that won them a title, to go out there and say we're going to match Tennessee, I feel like would be lying to the rest of the guys in the locker room because you made all of those guys earn it.
Yeah, and for Tennessee, I had to do some scrolling here. 38th in the 24/7 Sports composite team rankings. 0 5 stars, likely tonight their first 5 star in the cycle. Ohio State's at 7 with 2 5 stars and 11 4 stars. What exactly are we hearing that DGG is being offered? We'll discuss that next. It's Bishop and Friends.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Man and Timmy are inviting select jabronis to the station for pizza. Hey, that could be you. Email goodcleanboy@gmail.com and tell us why you should be chosen.
Presented by Billiards Plus and sponsored by Paisano Peppers.
The Fan. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We're looking good out there for the rest of the day. Plentiful sunshine, no real mugginess, and high temperatures in the mid-70s. Looks like the coolest afternoon we've had in about a month. For tomorrow, we start off in the mid-50s with a mostly clear sky. Mostly sunny skies into the afternoon with highs in the upper 70s. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. Reeser's mustache is so nice, it has its own area code. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Yes, you are. Eric Reeser, Joshua Perry, Ryan Baker with you until noon today. Because of 20 most interesting programs covering the Miami Hurricanes, we'll do that in the 11 o'clock hour. We're going to move Hey Guys to 10 o'clock, so get your Hey Guys questions in at 971BFS. We'll take them in the YouTube chat, so long as we can read them on the air. 10 o'clock for that, and then at 10:17, we'll do Higher or Lower. Our normal Wednesday segment at 10 o'clock moves a little bit because we got to shuffle Hey Guys. And the USA Today had a ranking of the top college football programs. I think it's an interesting conversation where they've got Ohio State relative to where they have other programs, including the Miami Hurricanes. And one of the schools, Joshua, where I think there would be real interest in Miami from the Big Ten and the SEC if the ACC were to break away.
Sure.
It would also be Miami, I think, as one of the catalysts. You know, the two Sunshine State schools in the Atlantic Coast Conference, I think, would be the two that would start this whole round of
one of them
expansion.
Ain't got no business starting anything right now.
They all think they do. It's the, I mean, Florida State feels that it is in that position. And it is wild, but so long as they're going to, if they find money to do it, all right, who's got interest in the Seminoles?
To your point, I think there would be interest there, no doubt. I think Miami would be a no-brainer for a lot of reasons. and I think it's on the sheet for later on, mm-hmm. but the changes to the Save College Sports Act, some of the proposed changes, I think it'd be easier for the SEC to add because they would have more room. They're trying to limit that thing to 19 total. They're at 16, so they've got room for three. The Big Ten's only got room for one if that were to be the law that was passed. So, yeah, I mean, it feels like it'd be a natural fit regionally for the SEC, and they've been pretty regional in their expansion anyway. So I could see it. Florida State, I'm struggling with, though. Just like, it's been so bad the last couple years. They got a little bit of money issues right now trying to get a stadium renovation finished. Mm-hmm. Like, they're in a weird spot.
Yeah, it's one of the ultimate sliding doors moments of the last 5 years, really, in the sport. Is how do you leave that team out of the college football playoff?
Well, because
Jordan Travis was injured, and the committee did not view the Seminoles,
you know, it's really
as the same football team.
It's really our fault. Me and Tyvus had a hand in that.
Oh.
Because we saw in the first year of the playoff, the prove it with the new quarterback needs to be a 59-0 type of outcome, and that's not what they did.
You got to make the statement game in the championship. That's true. So it's your fault that Florida State is in the situation, in the position that it is. The Seminoles are not going to be one of our 20 most interesting programs. But there will be discussion with them this season and for Miami and really for all those ACC teams that want to be probably in a better conference because of a better financial standing. And really the reason we're in all of this mess is because the NCAA for the longest time wanted to limit movement of the players, wanted to limit earnings potential, which wanted to limit earnings.
Yes.
Limit anything. And in America, when you want to limit something, you're going to run into some issues, as you probably should. With David Gabriel George going just back to his commitment coming up at 5:30 today, the money isn't the biggest thing for me because I assumed we were going to get to this at some point.
Right.
Where if Jeremiah Smith's coming out and saying one program, coincidentally, probably the Miami Hurricanes offered him $10 million, I sit back and go, well, he's probably worth that much.
Yeah.
As a college football player.
Well, you do that for Jeremiah.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's Jeremiah Smith. He's the unicorn. So the money's not the thing for me, but the idea that Tennessee reportedly offering him the number zero the day he walks onto campus, I think, well, okay, Ohio State's got the block O. That was a Ryan Day tradition. There's no way that's going to be given. The starting job being promised to a high schooler.
Okay.
I am really thrilled that they're not just throwing that out there to anybody.
Let me say this. If somebody's promising you $2 million a year, I understand that. If they're saying you'll be our day one starter, then me kind of as a guy, again, like I'm so far beyond my playing days, my perspective's totally different. But if you can offer that to me, then your team's probably not very damn good, right? So there's a question there about like, what am I walking into? How much better am I going to get by my surroundings? And nobody should ever make a decision off of what number they would wear. I wore maybe the ugliest number that you could wear. 37 is an ass number.
Oh, come on.
It's bad. It is one of the worst. It doesn't matter. Make the plays. And so this is the other part about it too. Like the more you start to get into maybe some of the sweeteners that are there outside of the money, I understand that part of it. You got to ask yourself the question, like, how much do we want to get into business with somebody if these are some of their priorities? Mm-hmm. Because part of my pitch, of course, is, hey, we can do this for you and we can do that. These are the nice little added deals. But you're competing for a championship on an annual basis. You're going to compete against guys who will be playing on Sundays for a very long time. You're going to get coached by guys who have coached on Sundays, including the head coach, including the offensive coordinator, that you're going to be practicing against a defensive coordinator who coached in the NFL, and we're going to develop you into a draftable high draft pick, right? So if we're talking about numbers and I just laid all that out for you, then maybe this just isn't the right fit in the first place.
And I'll go back to the starting job. I don't think anybody should be promised that. Even like the $2 million a year, that is what it is. And if somebody wants to offer you that, that's fine, but you haven't proven that. Like, Jeremiah Smith's different.
Right.
Like, the $10 million now.
It'd take him, like, 2 days in Columbus to prove that he's wide receiver one.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, with Jeremiah, I don't know what he got walking onto campus from Ohio State, and I'm sure it was, a nice chunk of change.
But I think he probably took less than other teams were willing to offer.
For sure he did. And the $10 million now is probably earned because you've seen it 2 years in a row on the field. We haven't seen any of this from David Gabriel Georges, and I'm sure he's really good. But I think the point I was getting at is that Ohio State isn't against you starting as a freshman. We see Bo Jackson did it last year. Jeremiah Smith, we just talked about. There's probably a decent chance that Chris Henry Jr. is one of the three wide receivers that takes the field first for Ohio State this year. Maybe not the opener, but at some point,
sure.
You just have to earn that.
Right.
If you come in and earn that, they'll let you do it, but they're just not going to hand it to you. And I would think that's something that you would want more, as you mentioned, because if I'm walking on campus the first day, and you're handing me a starting job? How good are you? Really?
It's a hell of a question. I mean, this will be the third day that we've mentioned it. I want to be around the best. I want to compete against the best. I want to compete with the best. Like, that should be a part of the thought process. And once again, would love to have him, right? Like, that would be
of course, a
big recruiting win here. But I think could be naive in this new age, but at Ohio State, I don't know if there is ever a player where it's like, we have to have this guy. Jeremiah feels like the closest thing in a long time to like, we must have this guy. But like, we want guys to come in here with the right mentality, the right attitude. We want them to earn it. You got to grind. You got to be willing to compete. That has to be a part of the thought process.
I think Jake Diebler's had the right process, the right attitude, the right mindset this offseason. I really like what Ohio State's done in the transfer portal, recruiting at a high school. Anthony Thompson, his NIL package was probably worth something for a guy who should be starting this fall for the basketball Buckeyes, a guy who in February, I think, needs to become your alpha if you're looking to make it into the Sweet 16. Like, Junie Mobley is going to be the absolute leader of this team, but it needs to then morph into the Anthony Thompson show for the Buckeyes to have that kind of success in March, and then to really build something that we've been clamoring for here in Columbus for the longest time. The basketball Buckeyes have had a ton of open practices. Jake Diebler's been everywhere, and I think it's a really good idea to do now before football kind of engulfs everything. Mm-hmm. Basketball Buckeyes had an open practice yesterday at the Schottenstein Center. They are going to Miami for a two-day layover before heading to Puerto Rico for an exhibition. Everything else is kind of unknown at this point. From Adam Jardy of the Columbus Dispatch, as of July 21st, Ohio State was unsure exactly who would be playing. Buckeyes had initially planned a trip to Israel, but had to pivot earlier this year for a variety of reasons, safety concerns among them, leading them to a Puerto Rico trip instead. Ohio State's going to touch down on the island July 31st, return August 5th, play two games in San Juan. Diebler says they don't know yet about the opponents that they're actually going to be facing. And so I wonder, you know, for this Puerto Rico trip, kind of the things that they're going to be working on. Here's Ohio State's head coach on that.
It should be good competition. We haven't received a roster yet, so we're working with some people down there, and we anticipate, you know, being some good competition, playing against some experience, which I think will be really good for us. But not exactly sure who we're going up against yet. We'll get some of that information a little bit more next week.
And I think that could be a good thing, not knowing kind of what you're up against.
I agree.
Also not knowing what your team's going to be.
Yeah. I think you go in there with expectations, obviously, but not too many. And then you kind of figure things out. And you force guys into situations, too, where maybe they've got to get a little bit uncomfortable and crafty and creative with their game. I think that's positive.
More from Ohio State's head basketball coach. And then the SEC is super serious, guys. That's in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends on
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in BMB, nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up with you?
Sponsored by Apex Pros.
The pros who knows.
All right, here's what's up on a first Friday edition of the program before we get to the SEC having their hissy fit down in Tampa. And I wonder if the Big Ten has something similar next week where they're both in the exact same position. They're on the other side of this Protect College Sports legislation. If you hear similar sentiments from Big Ten next week in Chicago that you're hearing from guys like Greg Sankey, we'll have cut from Kirby Smart coming up here in a couple of minutes. We talked in the last break, Joshua, about Jake Diebler doing all the little things right in the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
It will not take away from the expectation that they need to make a run in March. And they need to still win on the court and put themselves into a position where they can do that winning in March. And I think the burden falls on, obviously, Jake Diebler, but Junie Mobley, who needs to shoulder a lot of this team as they get into the portion of their non-conference play that puts them into December, that gives them a chance to hand it off to Anthony Thompson, where he can kind of peacock into March Madness. Here's Jake Diebler from yesterday talking about that leadership of Junie being vital.
It's critical. It's going to be critical to the success of this team. The consistency of which he has led has been better than I anticipated in the summer. I knew he had the stuff to get there before the season started, but he's ahead of schedule in regards to that. And his buy-in to being a leader has been great. The consistency, certainly with his voice, but his work ethic. I mean, he's in here every single morning. And so when guys come in here to lift, they're seeing him walk out of the gym with a lather. That sets a tone for our team. And he's been really impressive.
You know, television superstar Jacob Reimer has participated in some of these open practices, and just hearing from him discuss Junie and the leadership role that he's taken, being vocal with guys, getting on guys about lack of effort or lack of defensive play. I mean, there's the leadership void left by Bruce Thornton that if Junie can step in and fill somewhat, because it's so hard to ask, what, a three-year guy to be Bruce Thornton. Thornton was a four-year captain. But if you can take steps to morph into that by December, then there's great things on the horizon for this program.
I tend to agree with that. And it's difficult when you're following such a great leader and the torch is being passed to you. But hearing the different ways, right? Like Junie using his voice, I think, is important. And you have to have a guy in the locker room who is unafraid to speak up. But you also have to show it. And so this idea of like showing up before everybody else to workouts and he's getting things going is important. And I think for a lot of players, like, you're really good at one, but maybe not as good at the other. Like, you're good at showing up and maybe you don't use your voice, or you're a guy who can, you know, be a little bit rah-rah, but at times maybe, you know, athletically or whatever the case is, you disappear. So if he can do both, I think that's a really positive thing. And the best teams that I have been around are teams where you have dudes in the locker room and it's not coaches always getting on your case and it's not them having to set the tone. It's a player who at times will tell coach to step aside so he can handle things. I don't know if he's quite there yet, but if he can get to that point, it feels pretty good.
It's funny. Jake did talk a little bit about that in the availability of staying out of the way and letting the players, you know, do their thing and handle things. I think you saw a little bit of what John Mobley could do as a leader last year when he had a really bad shooting game. And they said for the next week, he was in the gym at 5 a.m. getting shots up. And he went on a run where he had two or three straight games of 20-point games. I think one of them was a 28-point game. So you saw that. And I wonder, with the part of just hearing John Mobley Jr. more at practice now, I wonder if some of that comes with he was kind of deferring to Bruce. Bruce had been the guy that was there. Bruce was the lead dog. He was the alpha. And maybe John Mobley Jr., sometimes you don't want to step on that guy's toes or whatnot. And maybe he was a little more reserved because of that. But it's nice, from the things we're hearing from people who have been there seeing things and what you're hearing from Jake Diebler, that he is jumping up and taking the reins. I still, Reese, I'm with you. I believe if this team wants to get where they want to go on the court, Anthony Thompson needs to take over throughout this year. But that doesn't mean he's going to be the leader, or he's the type that can be a leader. So this leadership from John Mobley Jr. is key.
I don't need, or I don't think, this Ohio State team needs Anthony Thompson to be a leader right now, but he needs to be the alpha come March. And this doesn't take away from the expectation that I have for this squad by doing all the little things right, by having Junie Mobley take a more leadership role with the team. They have to win basketball games and they have to make a run in March. The expectations should not change. If anything, Jake's doing a good enough job to have us raise the expectations a little bit.
Tend to agree.
So, and that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing and should be embraced.
And as I've talked about multiple times on this show, when I look ahead to the end of the year for Ohio State and I see a basketball court that has John Mobley Jr., Amari Bynum, Anthony Thompson and LJ Smith. I don't care who the fifth player is on this roster that's out on the court with those four. That's the most talented basketball team you've had at Ohio State in a long, long time. And that alone should make you excited and raise expectations a little bit.
So I think it's November 2nd. The Buckeyes open the season in Salt Lake City, taking on BYU. Like we talked about football season being here before we know it. That probably will too. It feels like every year we're saying like, oh yeah, it's basketball time. Because football just is it consumes through, I would say, 360 days out of the year.
Sure.
We're talking about people talking about football in Tampa is the prevailing conversation. Next week, we'll be talking about people talking about football in Chicago, but it's the ultimate football that we care about. And we heard from Greg Sankey earlier in the week, the commissioner of the SEC, talking about their conversations into leaving the NCAA and going their own about a playoff, about a new college league, whether that has to do with their Olympic sports and football or just football. Those conversations are all being had, and they probably should be. And it does come from a place of frustration. Now, the most frustrated person, I think, in terms of outward frustration and being vocal for the past couple of years has been Kirby Smart, the head coach at Georgia. And up on the podium yesterday, he was asked about the SEC's possible secession plan.
Yeah, I've actually been saying that for a long time to our president and our administrators that, you know, my frustration is I sit in a meeting, and so many times I sit in a meeting, and I learned this, I think, 11 years ago, my first SEC head coaches meeting. I had a coach tell me, we will not get anything done in these meetings because we don't have any power or any control. We sit and say what we want, but that doesn't necessarily come to fruition. So I've learned that, you know, until we get governance and we have someone that actually has the power to make decisions, or we can make decisions within our own community, we're not going to have much control. And that's unfortunate, but that's where we sit right now. And if that's the best alternative to get everybody playing by the same rules, then I would want to do that.
I don't know if I can take an SEC coach seriously when he says we ought to play by the same rules.
Yeah, well, okay, so the idea of play by the same rules that they want for what they think is best, I can take seriously. Now, if we're talking about everybody has to follow the same rules and you might not like the rules that you have to follow, yeah, no, they're definitely not going to do that. This is a conversation that obviously picking up steam in terms of narrative. I don't think these guys could pull this off if they wanted to.
No, I don't think it'll happen.
I mean, somebody explain to me a world where that makes sense. So it would be the SEC doing their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which nobody else is going to play ball with them. So
the Big Ten might.
I have no idea if they would. And so you have an all SEC schedule, and the SEC championship is their national championship. They're at that point, they would basically be saying, we don't care about any sports outside of football and basketball, because they need everybody else so they can schedule Olympic sports. SEC track might be fun, just SEC. But all that to say, like, I don't think there's a way practically they could pull it off. And the part that nobody's talking about is, I don't think that makes them a cent more money. Like, sure, you can enforce the rules you want to enforce, but that tanks your value from a TV perspective, because you're not viable for a title.
If the Big Ten offers a similar discussion next week, I will say it's posturing. I think it is absolute posturing by the Southeastern Conference and doing what it's doing because they're all just mad. And they're mad as hell that they haven't been able to win in three seasons. They're mad as hell that they're getting teams and the discussion about being left out. They're mad as hell that, as you said, they got bamboozled in the nine conference games yesterday. That they're looking at the Big Ten, who's making more money than them, and they've forever thought themselves the best conference in the country. And now they're no longer in that position of power that comes with winning on the football field.
So let's circle back to this. Let's say the Big Ten comes out and they do a similar thing next week.
Mm-hmm.
So even if both of them decided that they didn't want to participate in collegiate sports as we know it, how do we know that they would work well together?
We have no idea.
I don't think they would. Exactly. Like, this whole thing is insane to really even like throw out there as an option. Like, I just don't think you can execute on it.
When you see their comments and you hear the comments that we play, and if you're just taking it from that, if you're just hearing it, if you're just taking it at face value, you go, well, That's not great. And there have been people on ESPN, and we'll ask Jake Trotter when he joins us at 10:30. We'll ask Paul Feinbaum when he joins us tomorrow at 10:30. Alex Dono from the Locked On Canes podcast and the Locked On ACC podcast. He joins us at 11:30. We'll get a variety of perspectives from various parts of the country. And I think all of them are going to say it is just posturing. Mm-hmm. Because when you try to figure out the logistics of it, first off, nobody in the SEC can agree on anything, it feels like.
No, I mean,
the SEC can't agree with anything the ACC wants to do. No. The SEC and the Big Ten can't really agree on anything. No. The credit I'll give to the Big Ten and the decision makers there, and yes, that includes Michigan, is they've been rowing in the same direction forever.
Yeah.
At least outwardly.
It's self-preservation in a certain way where it's like, might not be the best for everybody involved, but it's the best for us to be around and for us to have strength.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think that's the one thing they've done well, but I don't know where that leads them. I think it leads them to being exactly where we're at, but just from a position of power compared to the other conferences.
I saw this pop up on my feed. Chip Kelly, what are you doing? We'll discuss that next. Bishop and Friends.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in BMB, nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Listener, are you having a stressful day? Do you want to unwind before you go home to your annoying family? Good news. You can spend time with our annoying family, Common Man and Timmy.
Weekdays from 3 to 6.
The Fan.
The Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by Federal Elite Heating and Cooling and Bryant. Doing whatever it takes to keep you and your home comfortable.
The Fan.
Taking the art of sports radio and day drinking to a whole new level. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, so I posted this at 971 BFS. Northwestern had a media availability yesterday at their new Ryan Field, and it looks gorgeous. I still maintain, and I think Josh was going to be on the opposite side with me, that they should just play their football games at that riverfront ramshackle or the lakefront ramshackle that they've had.
The Erector set.
I think it's such a gorgeous view. I mean, their practice facility has the view of Lake Michigan. Just play your games there.
I don't think it was enjoyable for anybody except for the folks that wanted a view or mm-hmm. wanted to look at aerial shots of it.
It's better, in my opinion, than playing at Wrigley. Stop playing football games at baseball stadiums,
y'all.
I'm
so done with Wrigley. That it's bad.
So about 35,000 seats for this new stadium is what I'm reading from the Chicago Sun-Times. October 2nd is when they would like to open new Ryan Field against Penn State. I don't know if Chip Kelly lost a bet, if this is his fantasy football punishment, but Ohio State's former offensive coordinator, former head coach of the Oregon Ducks, former head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, was out there yesterday in a purple safety vest with a hard hat on. Now, I don't know if it's OSHA, because I think there's probably an I in that acronym for Illinois, but for the workplace, yeah, if it's a new construction, you probably got to have the helmet on. You probably have to have the safety vest on, but he's taken questions, and it's the funniest damn image.
I don't know. I personally don't know if the safety vest was a requirement or if somebody was just like, hey, do you want to wear this? And he was like, sure. I've been in construction zones before. I used to actually have a hard hat in the back of my car once upon a time. And so I get that whole thing. You got to protect the noggin.
I agree.
But the safety, like, bro, they can see you. I promise they can see you.
I have a feeling this was just all Chip Kelly's idea.
Yeah. And he was like, let's like he's do this leaning for into it.
A little fun, yeah. Like loosen up the guys some. I think it's hilarious.
Ohio State's had such good luck, but I do wonder what things would have looked like with Chip authoring Ohio State's offense last season.
Yeah.
Because I can't imagine there's a world where he's not able to go to Ryan Day and be like, we sure we want to sit on the football for all 12 games?
Yeah.
Because the pushback, I think, from Ryan Day was, well, yeah, we want to be prepared for a playoff run. And I think Chip Kelly would be like, we sure we want to do that? Because you can't do that this season.
So
there is no switch flipping in the postseason that can be done. So the offensive attack for the Buckeyes this year must be like what Chip Kelly was doing in the college football playoff in 2024.
It's such an interesting thing to me. Like that, I'm not exactly sure that they could not flip the switch, right? Like I don't know if they even really attempted to go all that fast at any point when they got down against Miami. Yeah, like I don't know if that was something that they said. I just felt like they made a decision that their style was going to be you know, grind it out. We're going to possess the football, which, by the way, Miami, high time of possession team last year. Indiana was a high time of possession team last year. Like, there was something to this idea of being able to possess the football for some of the better teams last year. But, like, I don't think it was a, oh, we can't flip the switch. I just think they never actually tried to flip it.
Which is worse, maybe.
Maybe.
Because you
maybe.
Needed to. And I do wonder, what, you know, the Penn State team you thought you were going to play was maybe one of those litmus test games.
Yeah.
Where you thought, all right, what can we do against like competition, against like talent? And they fell apart.
Yeah.
And so that game, I mean, it, while it will always mean something when Ohio State plays Penn State, grand big picture,
right.
It didn't.
I just psychologizing that team a little bit. I think when the game got, when Julian threw that pick six, I think it got a little bit away from them. And then you have to make a decision on, do we up the tempo with an offensive line that is not protecting, mm-hmm. and our possession ends up being 17 seconds and we go backwards and these guys feel terrible about it? Or do we try to grind it a little bit, maybe stand over the ball, don't give it back to them so quick, try to build a little bit of confidence that way? And that's a tough mental game to get yourself into.
We've talked a lot about this, about the SEC this week and complaining about scheduling. There's something to the other end of that, though, with not playing anyone. And then you play somebody at the end and it hurts you. And Ohio State played Texas last year, but Texas first
week
game,
one, they're different teams was, by the end of the month.
Absolutely. And who knows, that Texas team lost what, three games throughout the season? Who knows exactly how good that Texas team was, especially early on. Penn State wasn't what you thought they were going to be. Michigan's always a big game, but that was not a good Michigan football team last year as far as upper echelon mm-hmm. talent. So there's something to, this is really hard. We play too many, but if you don't play enough.
But this is where they kill me, though. And I saw this tweet, I think it was Chris Lowe from On3, who was like, Oklahoma in November, they played Missouri, they played Tennessee, they played LSU, and they played Michigan early in the year, and mm-hmm. I think Alabama they had at the end of the year. And it's like, oh man, look at how tough their schedule was. Tennessee didn't beat an FBS team with a winning record. Missouri didn't beat an FBS team with a winning record. Alabama, after Halloween last year, was not a great ball team.
They forgot about Ryan Williams.
LSU fired their coach before they played Oklahoma. And so it's like, yes, I get it. Like, the Ohio State schedule certainly was soft, but part of my issue with these SEC guys being like, oh, our thing is so tough, is like, it's not as tough as you guys say it is. Like, some of these teams actually aren't as good as what their record shows.
All those teams you mentioned, I believe, ended with at least four losses.
Yeah, I mean, like, well, I think Missouri in their bowl game, they got beat by an ACC team, I believe. Tennessee lost to a Big Ten team in their bowl game. We saw what Alabama did when they played a Big Ten team in the college football playoff. Like, once again, I'm just not sure it's as good as what they're trying to tell us it is.
Well, to them, it will always just mean more.
Yeah.
And we can all, the rest of the country, sit back and go, you sure about that? But they're in their own little bubble. They're doing their media days right now. This from Alabama's Kalen DeBoer, who has the most ridiculous heat on his seat of any coach in the country, because I will maintain that his job is the hardest of any football coach has ever been asked. To follow up the Tuscaloosifer the way he's got to,
yeah,
with the way that Saban is still the most present figure in the sport.
His,
he has a statue outside the damn stadium. His name, office isn't
on
his name's on the field.
Field office in the stadium, and he's on the college football show of record.
So DeBoer was asked if his Tide career will be defined by if he wins a national title. DeBoer, quote, I wouldn't doubt that's the case, end quote. And that's fair. He probably took the job knowing he was going to have to win a national championship, excuse me, the first couple of seasons.
But think about his mentality when he took that job. We just played for a national title at Washington. At Washington. He's like, I could definitely walk into Tuscaloosa and win some games. And
look at
it's
the
just,
talent I have, and the talent came to Columbus.
It's just a little different.
I'll say this. I'm super happy that he stayed at Alabama and didn't go to Michigan, because I think that guy's a damn good coach.
I think he's a good ball coach,
too. And he's getting a lot of slings and arrows that may not be deserved right now.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I was just crapping on how Alabama wasn't elite last year, they won 11 games, right?
Like, college football playoff, that's not nothing.
11-4 is a little bit of a yucky record, but it's not like the bottom has fallen out of that program. It's just the fact that they're so used to winning every year that they can't tolerate 11 wins.
We got to do Hey Guys at 10 o'clock because we have our 20 most interesting programs at 11. We'll do the Miami Hurricanes on today's program. But I did want to get to this from the Miami Heat coming up next. It's Bishop and Friends.
Atlas Butler has convenient two-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. Baseball's regular season has hit the 100-game mark for all 30 teams. Guardians have played 102 and are on a two-game winning streak. That's enough in the AL Central to stay in the hunt. The trade deadline approaches Monday, August 3rd at 6 o'clock. Cleveland beat Minnesota last night 5-2. Guardians are tied with the White Sox for the top spot in the Central. They'll go in Game 3 of a four-game set tonight at Progressive Field. As for the Reds, their investment in Chase Burns is paying off in the best way. Cincinnati gave Burns a 7-year extension worth $105 million last week. Last night in Seattle, their All-Star struck out 6 in 5 innings of work to power the Red Legs to a 4-2 win over the Mariners. Cincinnati's 15-4 when Burns toes the rubber. Reds can take the Seattle series with a win this afternoon at 3:40. And Ohio State's Jake Diebler is taking his team to South Beach, then to Puerto Rico next week for a pair of exhibition games against teams yet to be determined. This update is sponsored by the Waterworks and Header Plumbing, Drain, Heating, and Cooling. Together to serve you better, scheduled today at thewaterworks.net.
Atlas Butler has convenient two-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Sports discussion served in light beer quantities. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Too much to do and too little time to do it on a first Friday edition of the program. Eric Reeser, Joshua Perry, Ryan Baker with you until noon. We'll get Jake Trotter on at 10:30. ESPN senior college football reporter has certainly had enough to write about in this wild off season that factors to get even wilder over the next couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
It's a soft date of December 1st to expand the college football playoff in 2027. So there's going to be a lot of discussion about that. The SEC wants to break away from the NCAA. I feel like the Big Ten might be singing a similar song next week when media days hit Chicago, because there's consternation with both the top conferences with what the NCAA has been doing, or I guess I should say what the NCAA has not been doing over the last 30 years. That's put them, college sports, I mean, in this spot.
Yeah.
We're here because of their inaction, largely.
I agree with that. I think Tony Petitti probably feels a little bit more confident in Washington, maybe more connected to some of those people there than
he should not.
Greg Sankey. Well, I don't think anybody should be confident in anything right now. But I don't think Greg Sankey has even, like, I don't know if he's really that into the legislation aspect of it. I think Tony Petitti's been a little bit more dialed in. So I'll be curious to see what his tone will be when it comes to that. And one thing I do know is he's going to walk up there and be like, yep, more games. Let's do it. More games is good.
More content, more inventory.
That's it. That's it.
More dollars.
That's it.
There it is. What makes sense on a first Friday is, hey guys, we've got to do that an hour earlier because we've got Miami, the U, our 20 most interesting coming up at 11.
Nothing is off limits. Your participation is required. Just use the hashtag Hey Guys and ask anything you want. Do it now.
Sponsored by Rose Pest Solutions.
I get a little clenchy when I do the hosting and the button pushing because I feel like I'm going to hit the wrong one. And so fortunately for our friends at Rose Pest Solutions, we got the Hey Guys that they so wonderfully sponsor.
There we go.
In at the right moment, at the right time. We will start in the YouTube chat. And if we can read them on the air, we'll try to read yours live as we roll throughout this segment. We'll start with JB, who asks, hey guys, and this is a question for JP.
Uh-oh.
I have a relative starting his collegiate football career next month. What is your number one piece of advice for him?
Well, I saw that when it came through in the chat, and I believe he said that the nephew is going to be playing at an NAIA school. So I would give a couple of pieces of advice. The first one is walk in there with high expectations of yourself, but no expectations of the experience. Because I think that allows you to kind of move a little bit more freely. Try some different things. Go into the workouts with a clear, open mind. Do all the things your coaches ask you to do. So high expectations for yourself, no expectations at all for the experience. The second thing, and I feel like NAIA might be a little bit of a different culture, but when I was at Ohio State, and especially now with these guys, they don't spend enough time on campus. They don't get to know their classmates very well. Like, they don't do the collegiate experience. Lean into everything. Go to the different events. Meet the different people. You might be working with them one day. Like, be a student and soak in that experience as well.
I saw this one pop up from Dan. He asks, hey guys, do you think the heat that Kalen DeBoer is taking is similar to the ridiculous heat that Ryan Day was taking right before that championship run 2 years ago?
Similar from the standpoint that they are both really good coaches who came after really, really good coaches, and everything they do is under a microscope. I think that's similar. People got really weird with the Ryan Day experience after all of the losses to the rival. And I think people in Tuscaloosa have gotten weird with the Kalen DeBoer experience because they haven't won a national title yet. And I think those are two different aspects of it, where one you feel like is something you can achieve every year. If you're a fan and your only expectation of a season is to win a title, you're a dummy and you're going to be disappointed a lot.
I think it is similar when you mention, as you mentioned, the expectations for Ohio State and for Alabama is that, hey, we should be competing for that national championship every year, meaning we should be in the title game every year. I think it's different, though, because Kalen DeBoer came into a team that lost everyone when Saban went out the door. And we've seen the landscape has changed a little bit, where it's harder for Alabama to compete in this new era. They don't have the money or the resources as some of these other teams do. Ryan Day was also 6 years into his tenure, and up until that championship run, Ryan Day did not have a good record against top 10 teams. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't there. Like, they didn't have any inexplicable losses. Everything else with the program was perfect, but they had not done well when the talent equated on the field. And the other thing, that last loss to Michigan is still one of the most one of the most inexplicable losses in Ohio State history. Yep. So they're a little different, where maybe the Ryan Day, I don't think either of them were warranted, but maybe the Ryan Day was a little bit more warranted. Kalen DeBoer, he was in a tough spot regardless.
Yeah, I think it's such a unique way that folks on either side of the Ohio State-Michigan rivalry look at it. Because it's one thing that every year you can say that must be done, we have to check it off the box. I don't think Ohio State or Michigan every year says we have to win a title, or else, like, that coach is not the guy. Because a lot of those years, like, playoff teams or, you know, New Year's Six or whatever the case was, and I think people were fine with that part of the outcome. It was just the thing that happened the last weekend of November that people weren't very happy with at all.
Jeff Rimmer's middle half asks, hey guys, what is the most overrated breakfast cereal? He says it's Captain Crunch.
I haven't had cereal in a long time. I'm an adult, so
So I'll let you think on this. Yeah. This is one of the easiest Hey Guys questions we've ever had. We actually have two today that I think are both very easy for me. One is anything chocolate. Any chocolate cereal, I think, is just awful. And then Fruity Pebbles are terrible. They're the worst cereal ever, and people love them, and I think it's awful.
I don't know. I like Fruity Pebbles, so I'm going to have to disagree with you on that. I don't know. This is a toughie. What do people like to eat for cereal?
I mean, the only cereal I can remember eating was Cinnamon Toast Crunch. And for a decade when I ate cereal, that was the one that I would get. And I wouldn't touch any others. So all of the rest are bad. Fruit Loops, bad.
Yeah, I guess I'd say Fruit Loops. I never really was a fan. Will you see Kix? Kid-tested, mother-approved?
Yeah, that's Kix. A callback.
Yeah.
I don't remember the last time I ventured down the cereal aisle where I looked around me. I think if you're down the cereal, if I'm ever down the cereal aisle, I'm like, oh, what I want's not here.
Yeah. Not for me.
This from Ace, who asks, hey guys, the state fair is starting back up, so the final first Friday of the month, the Ohio State Fair is back. He asks, what's the best state fair food?
French fries, I would have to say.
I believe we had a question similar to this not long ago, and I have always been a fan at fairs or festivals or whatever of the Texas Tenderloin, and I think funnel cakes, they're delicious.
Oh,
don't get me wrong,
oh,
they're delicious, but they are not better than an elephant ear.
I disagree on that,
too. Elephant ears. So I have to have both of those.
Yeah, I enjoy both, but funnel cakes used to be my favorite thing as a kid. My last two fair experiences, went in 2015, saw Drew Hill and Blackstreet, and it was phenomenal. I was the youngest person in there. I loved it. And then I think might have been 2018 or 19, I went and I did a steer show as like a celebrity deal, and it was
nice.
Hilarious and so much fun.
I'm looking at the food, the fair foods they have available starting next first Friday, or the final first Friday in July, and I think it's only good if you can eat it with your hands and it doesn't make a mess. Like if you got like the deep fried birria taco, if I'm saying that correctly, like I like the idea, but it does feel like that just gets all over your hands. And in late July, early August, when you've got sauce all over your digits.
You don't lick your fingers?
No, not when I'm outside. Like not when I have.
You're at the fair, brother. You can lick your finger.
Maybe that's just me.
I'm with you, Reese. I don't want sloppy food when I'm walking around.
And I'm that way at a ballpark. I'm that way at a football game. If I'm outside, I need to eat it, but it needs to be neat.
I don't know, man.
And that could be saying more about me than anything else.
See, but like the funnel cake or the elephant's ear, like it's got the powdered sugar. That's liable to end up powdering your shirt a little bit.
You're right.
You know?
But you just pop that and it's off.
You get a nice little shirt
pop and you're good.
Pop your collar.
Reese, we got to do Chris G's before we're done because I want to hear JP's answer.
Okay, Chris asks, hey guys, been driving all over the great state of Ohio. What's your favorite road trip snack and drink combo? Chris says his is White Monster and beef jerky.
So I would go with a Red Bull and sunflower seeds. And if I was going to go with a different snack, I would pick the black bag of Chex Mix.
So sunflower seeds is a great answer. For me, if I'm in the car and I'm over an hour, I'm grabbing a bag of the original cheddar pretzel combos and a fountain Mountain Dew. And I'm ready to go. Now, if I'm going longer and maybe I need more snacks, I'm going to have to throw some Starburst in there for the sweet.
I like a Starburst.
I'm a sunflower seeds guy. I know that flies in the face what I just said about making a mess, but I can get sunflower seeds into a cup or into a Gatorade bottle.
Every day. I've got a spitter in my car right now and two fresh bags of seeds.
The Biggs sizzling bacon seeds might be one of the greatest things ever invented.
But then you got to really hydrate.
Original sunflower seed. You got to hydrate.
Because your mouth just gets dry.
Just salt.
It's a lot of sucking. A lot of time sucking.
Whoa!
We have one more hey guys that I want to get to, and then we've got higher or lower. USA Today ranks college football programs. Where do the Buckeyes land on this list? That's next. Bishop and Friends.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah. They've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Retirement from football hits everyone differently. For Devere Posey and Dane Sanzenbacher, it means sitting around watching sports clips on the internet and arguing about them. Search for Didn't Catch That on YouTube and subscribe. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We're looking good out there for the rest of the day. Plentiful sunshine, no real mugginess, and high temperatures in the mid-70s. Looks like the coolest afternoon we've had in about a month. For tomorrow, we start off in the mid-50s with a mostly clear sky. Mostly sunny skies into the afternoon with highs in the upper 70s. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. Bo knows many people. He talks to
to the interesting ones on this show.
This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, before we get to higher or lower, we're going to do one more Hey Guys from Phil. He asks, aliens have landed on Earth, and we need to communicate with them and show them we are cool people. What three things do you show them to portray peace and coolness?
Who said we're cool?
We're not cool.
So I think I would start there. I would show them black coffee. Feel like we're running on that a lot of times. At least I am.
I am too, but I'm not sure that makes us cool.
I think it you talk to a person that hasn't had their cup of coffee and you tell me how cool they are. So I pull that one out.
I'll hear that.
I'm going to show them American football. Got to see this. This is a complete spectacle. And I don't know what the third thing would be.
I would show them tailgating in college football.
Yeah.
I would show them Lane Avenue on an Ohio State game day.
What about like a music festival? We could take them to like a bunch of different genres of music festivals.
I would not show them Bonnaroo because we're just dirty humans.
That's why you give them
maybe
the full experience.
Did you ever go to Lollapalooza when you lived in Chicago?
Didn't. But you take them to Lolla. You go to, like Essence Fest or something. You go to, Buckeye Country Superfest. And you just give them a little smattering of how different crowds of people gather together. You know?
I don't know if he meant it with showing us how cool we are, but Jeff Rimmer's middle half just says pizza. And I'm going to assume he means that. Just give them pizza. And I think that's one thing we excel at, especially here.
So I think the first thing I would do, and JP, you said coffee, I would give him a drink. First thing I would do, that's what we do. Yeah, we
have our officially endorsed coming up from Baker's End at the end of the program. It's the favorite or the best thing you drank on vacation.
So that's what I would do first. I think I would hand him a drink, and then I'm with you, Reese. I would take him to a sporting event, and it could be football, it could be hockey, it could be soccer, basketball, whatever, but I would take a baseball game. I'd take him to a sporting event, and then I think the next thing I would do, and I don't know how much they would love this because I'm guessing the aliens are flying around in some kind of weird UFO, but I'd take him to an amusement park.
See, the thing with the drink is I remember my first beer and I hated it. I remember my first mixed drink and I hated it. I remember my first sip of wine and I hated it. It goes like the black coffee thing. I didn't get into coffee because I wanted to be a connoisseur. I got into coffee because it's a cheap way to pump caffeine into my veins. So I don't know for aliens who've never experienced any of that. If you hand them a Busch Light, they're going to be like, this is garbage. Well, here, now try this Miller Light or this garage beer.
Are we really going to hand them a Busch Light?
Whatever's in your fridge, I guess.
It's interesting.
But if there's a beer, what would you hand them?
Well, I've got Busch Light Limes and Kona Big Waves in the refrigerator.
Okay, Kona Big Wave.
So that would
be something.
But I don't know if I'd hand them. I don't know if I'd hand them the Busch.
All right. We got to do this real quick before we get to Jake Trotter here in 9 minutes.
Bishop and Friends present Higher or Lower.
I play this song because it's Big Ten's music now. Take that, Southeastern Conference. The best college football soundtrack. Because growing up, some of the most marquee games, yes, they were in the Southeastern Conference, but they came to this music. Now, the folks over at USA Today, there's a gaggle of them, ranked the top 25 college football programs. And so that's programs winning on the field, programs how they handle their business, similar rankings to how we'll do our categories for Miami and the other 20 most interesting programs coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. But at number one, the Ohio State Buckeyes. Can't go any higher than number one. At number two, the Alabama Crimson Tide. At number three, the Georgia Bulldogs. At number four, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Higher or lower for Notre Dame at four?
Honestly, I think it's about right. If I had to say one way or the other, I think I would go lower. But I look at this in terms of if these jobs came open, what would their ability to pluck the best coach in the sport be? And I think Notre Dame's going to be in the conversation of the top five places that could just get anybody they wanted to get. So maybe a tick lower, You know, you could put Texas over Notre Dame. I'd be fine with that, but not much lower.
I think, and it's interesting the way you just said that, JP, with the coach wanting to go there. So I think Notre Dame's probably about right. I think I have to drop Alabama a little bit, and I think I would have Texas number two. Ooh. Just for the fact that by your reasoning, JP, of a coaches want to go there, I don't see many coaches in the country turning down the opportunity to coach the Texas Longhorns. So drop Alabama. I think, yeah, Notre Dame's probably right.
I think you're right there. I think now Alabama is probably a lot more attractive than it was right when Saban left. But yeah, Texas is definitely, I mean, they got all the money. They're in a big city, right? Like, they got the history.
And Alabama doesn't have that money, as we've talked about.
No.
Texas is in at 5 on this list. Again, USA Today ranked the top 25 college football programs. So they're doing a lot of way back discussion when they're having these rankings.
Sure.
Four writers did this. And so Indiana, won't be in the top 10, but that's a program on the rise that in 25 years from now, how are we looking at and how are we discussing the Indiana Hoosiers? But on this list, at 6, LSU. At 7, Michigan. Higher or lower for the Wolverines?
I think I'd put Michigan over LSU. LSU is an interesting one because it was thought until Brian Kelly went there that if you coached at LSU, you'd be able to win a title, right? The amount of talent, whatever the case is. But it feels like they kind of operate in spurts there. And Michigan certainly has had some down years, but you put their trophy case, their funding, that institution in general, academics, you put that up against anything. And so for me, LSU would certainly slot in behind Michigan.
If Michigan had not won a national championship just 2 years ago, I would probably say Michigan is lower. But they have won that national championship. So I'm with you, JP. I would have Michigan right above LSU and probably LSU. Man, it's crazy to think that LSU has the national championships that they have here recently, but yet they've just ran through coaches.
I know.
At number 9, the Miami Hurricanes. We'll do them as our 20 most interesting today. At 10, the USC Trojans. At 11, the Oregon Ducks. Higher or lower for Oregon at 11?
This is another one where I think it's about right. I think the arrow's pointing up, so if we were to move them, I think up would be the direction that they would go. Their whole thing, flash, funding, but they don't have the trophy case. They're a bit of an outpost. It's hard to get to. There are some structural things there that make it a little bit difficult to put them too high on the list, but they've had moments as a program where it's like, you know, they were the flash and they were the sizzle and they might have been the coolest program in the country at certain points of time. It just ain't like the big dogs.
Yeah, I would have Oregon up at least one because I think right now they're a better program than USC. I know they don't have the history and they don't have the trophy case, but I think people would rather be at Oregon than they would be at USC right now. Miami's another one of those ones that if they wouldn't have had this past year, I would probably have them lower, but they did have this last year, so they proved that they can still be relevant. I still have a lot of issues trusting Mario Cristobal as a head coach, and I don't know what they're going to be this year without Bain and Mesidor and whatnot, but Miami's one, I think, with last year, it kind of saved their spot in the top 10.
Let me ask this question. If Kirby had to pick between Oregon and USC, which job do you think he'd take?
I would think it's Oregon.
I think so, too.
I don't know, man.
Yeah?
I don't know. The proximity to you got some elite offensive line that you can get out there. You got elite quarterbacking out there. And
he could win at USC.
I don't think Lincoln has really gotten the people rowing the same direction. I know Phil Knight's got a big checkbook on his own. There's a lot of people who went to USC that make a ton of money out there in SoCal.
That's what's been kind of incredible about the coaching hires have been bad. Lincoln Riley, if he doesn't bring his quarterback with him, like what's that program look like now? I know they just won the recruiting title, but I tend to think, Joshua, that's the only major championship they're going to win.
Yeah.
Is that recruiting title that they signed more than 30 guys out of high school. And it's like, Well, no one's doing that again either.
I know. We forget, though, when USC is good, they got everybody in Hollywood standing on the sidelines during the games.
It almost, I mean, in the 2000s, it took over. I mean, it would, and this is part of me that's like everything that once was the best. But I think to those USC teams, and I was like, I think they were rivaling the Lakers.
They were.
In terms of things to do in SoCal. And now, like, I might be misremembering because I was more college football.
I don't know, man. They had,
time.
They had Will Ferrell down there every week. They had Snoop Dogg catching punts in practice. Like,
well, wasn't it Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart were dating Kardashian and Hilton at the same time?
Like, that's true. I mean, that's the top end of what you can get out there. And I think Kirby might look at that and say, I'd be the guy who brings it back to that.
It's hard if you're going to give me Southern California to live with no budget. I mean, if you're living as a head football coach, life's pretty good. You're able to afford most things. They're going to make it comfortable for you. Hard to choose any place else in the country over that. We will get Jake Trotter on in 2 minutes. ESPN's senior college football reporter will join us, Bishop and Friends.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Let me introduce you to a man with a magnificent salt and pepper beard.
A man who's currently roasting lamb on a spit.
A man who runs the Rocky River Greek Festival. That man is Jake Trotter.
Sponsored by Window Nation. Buy four windows, get four free sale. Visit windownation.com now.
An ESPN senior college football reporter joins us on the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Eric Reeser, Joshua Perry, Ryan Baker with you on this first Friday edition of the program. And do we find Jake Trotter at Mid-American Conference Media Days? Jake, what are you doing there? And has Dr. John Steinbrecher, I believe the MAC commissioner, gone on another one of his tirades? Because those are pretty entertaining.
I'm sitting here at the 25-yard line in Ford Field, home of the Detroit Lions. The commissioner press conference, I think, is starting in like a half hour or so. So we'll see what he has to say. I have no idea what's on his mind. But yeah, good to be down here representing the MAC. You know, they don't always get a lot of publicity, but a lot of good teams, a lot of good players in this conference year to year.
So as an OU Bobcat, I thank you for your coverage. I do
You're
wonder,
welcome.
Will the Mid-American Conference have anything from their coaches or from their decision makers in response to what the SEC has been offering this week about secession talks? And I did want to ask you if you think it's lazy for me to come on these airwaves and say it's just the SEC throwing a temper tantrum.
Probably fair. I mean, if the SEC did break away, how would that really affect the MAC? Would it affect the MAC? I mean, you know, the Big Ten obviously would be a bigger deal for the MAC just based on geography and scheduling. But
sure.
I don't know that the SEC breaking away would have that much of a direct effect on the MAC. It would be the cascading effect that would have an effect on everybody, including the MAC at that point. So, but I mean, at the end of the day, I would be shocked if they followed through on breaking away from the NCAA. That just seems crazy to me.
Is there any chance that the top team in the MAC this year is getting any college football playoff buzz by the end of the year? I'm always so curious because it feels like it's, you know, American Conference and Mountain West and Sun Belt. And we watch some good MAC ball every week being here in the Midwest.
Yeah, it's really hard because you need a marquee non-conference win because the overall strength of schedule in the conference is not going to be good enough, I think, for the MAC to jump over, you know, an American team, for example, right? So, or even a Mountain West when you talk about Boise. The MAC does have some games this year. I mean, Ohio goes to Nebraska. I don't think that alone would be enough, but you got to win a couple of these games to get some attention. By the way, Nebraska, I think, only plays MAC schools in the non-conference this year. And they don't play anybody. You know, so
Eli Drinkwitz is crying right now.
I'm in charge of our scheduling story. Like, the toughest schedule, hardest non-conference, easiest group of five, and Nebraska's non-conference schedule is pretty brutal. Indiana actually has a really, really soft non-conference schedule. I think it's Western Kentucky, though, that has, as an aside, like an insane... I think it's Western Kentucky that has... okay, so listen to Western Kentucky's schedule. They play at Nevada, which is, you know, whatever. Then they go to Georgia, and then they go to Indiana. So, like, I know this is a different conference. This is Conference USA, but you need a win like that in order, I think, for your conference to, you know, when you're a MAC conference team, you know, in order to, you know, jump some of the other ones. So, I mean, like, we've seen Toledo have some moments over the years. But I think it's going to be really tough, and it's going to take like an unbelievable non-conference upset in order to get the attention you're going to need, you know, to be one of those 12 teams, right? Don't you guys agree?
Yeah. And certainly, you know, as the ACC talks about remaining, with the members that want to be in the conference, as the SEC and the Big Ten also talk about adding and possible conference expansion, what do you think the logical path forward for the group of five as a whole is?
Long term, I mean, it does feel like we are at some point going to get into, now this may be 20 years from now, like who knows? You know, the way college football goes, it takes forever, and then all of a sudden all these changes happen at once. But doesn't it feel like at some point we're going to have the equivalent of an AFC and an NFC, you know, aka the Big Ten and the SEC? You know, I don't know where that would leave the Big 12 and the ACC, but... You know, I think it'd be better. I think it'd be more fun for the group of six to have their own playoff. You know, maybe we have some crossover scheduling games, but, you know, I would love to watch, you know, Toledo play North Texas, you know, for the what would we call it? The group of six national championship. Because right now there's no path for most of these teams to get to, you know, a meaningful game in January. But, you know, if we could recreate what they have in the FCS with North Dakota State and South Dakota and those teams, I think it'd be really cool. But I don't know how far away we are from that happening. But it'll probably be dictated by what the big boys say, that the SEC and the Big Ten, what they ultimately decide, which may be nothing right now because they can't agree on anything.
I think it's a great idea for the group of six schools. We got the news this week, Jake, that Ward Manuel will be stepping down at Michigan. Did anything this week in the Michigan story saga that has been surprise you?
No, I don't think surprising. I mean, I think this felt starting to feel inevitable. I mean, you just look at the totality of the scandals and the issues that they've had there, not even the bigger ones. I mean, some other, you know, issues with assistant coaches they've had. You know, at some point it becomes too much, no matter how much winning you've enjoyed on the field, and they've enjoyed a lot of winning, you know, the basketball national championship, the football national championship, but it was too much. And, you know, there were, you know, I think there were issues where like, it just took so long for them to respond to, you know, including the Sharon Moore situation that, you know, it feels like they had to make this call. So we'll see who they hire. You know, I think the Kyle Whittingham hire was a big step in the right direction for them, just bringing some stability and some professionalism to the job. You know, they need to emulate that elsewhere. And I think they did that with Mike Boynton, who I know a little bit from when he was at Oklahoma State. You know, terrific guy, well-respected, players love him. And I think he'll actually do a pretty good job there for them. But the AD is in charge, and, you know, I think everything flows off that. And clearly, you know, wasn't the cleanest situation there across the board.
Jake Trotter, our guest on the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. And, you know, from a football standpoint, Kyle Whittingham in his first season, they've got the quarterback that they've paid. They've got, you know, one of the top running backs in one of the last recruiting classes. How does this look and feel, in your opinion, for Michigan on the football field this season?
Yeah, they're really interesting because I think their skill talent has a chance to be better than it has been, because they just have not had the type of weapons to compete with the Ohio States of the world, you know, the Oregons of the world. I mean, I you know, I'm a believer in Bryce Underwood. I mean, I think he has big time talent. I don't know how much what was happening off the field affected him last year, but I think, you know, with what they did at Dampier at Utah, you know, if they can translate that over, you know, I think he's going to have potentially a really good year. You know, you talk about, you know, their backfield with Jordan Marshall, who's played a lot of football. The true freshman I think you're referring to was Savion Hyder, who you just hear great things about. They've potentially got a really nice 1-2 punch at running back, despite losing Justice Haynes to the transfer portal. And then, you know, they got to get more out of the receiving position. It was big that they kept Andrew Marsh. You know, this is how bad they were at receiver last year. He didn't even play the first month of the season for whatever reason, and he still led them in every receiving category. So they've got to get more weapons there. They, you know, they've got some transfers they're going to be leaning on. You know, we'll see what happens there. But with the two backs, with Andrew Marsh, with Bryce Underwood, you know, that's a pretty good young four to build around. But to me, I don't put Michigan in the Ohio State, Oregon, Indiana tier right now. Maybe even USC. You know, if we're looking at a 14 that could contend for a playoff spot, I think they're in a tier below. And, you know, they've got to prove that they can, you know, they can score enough to become a true playoff contender again.
All right, let's end with USC. You mentioned them. I think they're one of the most intriguing teams coming into this season. Do they actually hit that expectation? I think that there are people in Southern Cal that are looking at them as a team that has to make the playoff this year. Can they actually do that?
Yeah, it's going to be tough. Their schedule is pretty rough. I think they have like a three game stretch that's pretty imposing, if I remember correctly, which includes, you know, the home game against Ohio State. But listen, they've got a quarterback in Mayava who led the country in QBR last year. You know, they've got to replace some of those receivers, you know, including Makai Lemon, who was a first round pick. But, you know, they've got enough talent coming in around him, you know, to still be pretty imposing offensively. And I think it comes down to defensively. You know, they've got to replace their defensive coordinator. Anton Lynn went to Penn State, his alma mater, to join Matt Campbell's staff there. You know, they were starting to make some progress defensively. Can they continue that momentum? But again, with USC, I think it always comes down to this. The physicality defensively to hold up against the Big Ten schedule. They just haven't been able to do it. And they've had moments when they've had an opportunity to win a big game, and that lets them down. I mean, the game that really sticks in my mind was 2 years ago. They're at Michigan. Was that 2 years ago? Yeah, it was 2 years ago. They're at Michigan. They've got the game won, and they can't make a tackle in the fourth quarter. Michigan couldn't throw the ball, and yet they still went down the field and scored in the final seconds to win the game. You got to be able to tackle in the Big Ten. You know, they've had some time to adjust to the Big Ten style of play. Is this the year that it pays off? You know, we'll see. They've lost a ton of games, you know, by a touchdown or less or in the fourth quarter. And, you know, we'll see if they have the, you know, resiliency and the conditioning to hang in there and win some of those games. But the talent is there for them to be a playoff team. There's no question about it. And, you know, Lincoln Riley, you know, he takes some hits for, you know, the way his defense is played. But that guy knows how to coach offensive football. And I think they're a really interesting team. And if they can survive the heart of their schedule in the middle of the year, then, yeah, I think they have a chance to finally get over the hump and be a playoff team. I mean, to me right now, I think they're the fourth team that I would pick in the Big Ten after the Big Three.
Yeah, I mean, in a conference where Indiana can be your champion, I guess anything can happen, especially this upcoming season. Jake, enjoy the action today in Detroit. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, see you guys. Take care.
And he joins us courtesy of the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems fan guest hotline. Nick Saban continues to make life difficult for SEC coaches. That's next. It's Bishop and Friends.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Your favorite fan shows are available as a podcast. What a concept. And don't miss exclusive podcast content like Austin and Burn. Listen on your schedule from anywhere in the world. Available wherever you get your podcasts. All your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Pull up a stool and ask the bartender for something neat, because Uncle Bo is on the radio. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, so it's Alabama's chance to speak today. Kalen DeBoer and company at SEC Media Days down in Tampa. And an ESPN employee is making life really, really tough for Kalen and for most of the I would actually say all of the SEC.
Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Billiards Plus. Find your next grill and everything you need for the master griller. Billiards Plus on Dublin Center Drive in Dublin.
ESPN's Nick Saban at SEC Football Kickoff Media Days said this, quote, "I actually think we should play 12 games against the Power Five. That's it, because it's a business and people want to see those games," end quote. Oh, also, former Alabama head coach Nick Saban. Thing or not a thing?
It's a huge thing. It's a huge thing because this is not something he would have said as a coach. And it's a huge thing because he's throwing all of his coaching brethren under the bus with this idea. Now, I don't know if it's ever going to get to that world because there'll be so many people who are like, we literally can't do this, including Group of Five, who are like, we need these bye games. Yep. So, but Nick, what are you doing? Like, I'm sure Kirby's blowing his phone up right now, and Kalen DeBoer is probably looking at him like, dog, my life is hard enough as it is, and then you're over here recommending that we just play more difficult games. That is an insane thing to do, but he's full media now, and I love it.
This is a thing on multiple levels. I love what you said, JP, about the Group of Six teams needing these games to help not only prop up their programs, but their universities. Like, this money is huge for them. And I know we always look at all of this through the prism of the biggest schools and making the most money and what affects the outcome in our national champions. But there's a trickle-down effect in a lot of this. There's a hurting a lot of universities, not just their sports programs, but their academic programs, their university as a whole. So, yeah, this isn't feasible. We talk about players' health. That's not feasible, right, for these guys to play 12 games against competition that is equal or better, and then have them go play in the playoffs as well. Like, that's a lot on these kids. But I understand, like, a 18, 19-year-old kid is different nowadays than it was 20, 30 years ago with all of the nutrition and weightlifting and science in that, how much it's come. But, yeah, and you're right. Saban would have never wanted to do this. He never scheduled. He could have done this. He could have scheduled this, but he never did.
So in the world that Nick Saban wants to live in right now, it's 12 marquee Power 5 matchups. You got the 9 conference games. Then you've got a conference title tilt.
Uh-huh.
And then you've got potentially 3 games in the college football playoff.
Sure.
Like, that's the content inventory in me is like, that's great. We all want to see all of those games. But you're insane if you think teams are going to be able to go through that road.
I mean, somebody's going to come out, right? Somebody has to win.
Someone's got to win.
Now, might not be pretty, but somebody has to do it. So we'll see.
I mean, the NFL, no, because you can't compare it to the NFL.
The NFL,
there's the New York Jets and the Cleveland Browns.
Nothing but a series of various Iowa games in different fonts. That is what the NFL is on a week-to-week basis.
That's the promo.
So,
this from the Hollywood sphere. The first full-length trailer for Avengers Doomsday came out yesterday. Film's going to release worldwide Friday, December 18th. It earned $16.5 million in limited domestic pre-sales. That's considered impressive with only 1,000 theaters and no IMAX yet. Pre-sales from, this is from Variety, pre-sales for Avengers Doomsday were 2 times higher than Deadpool and Wolverine, which had all formats and all screens available. Thing or not a thing?
Well, this is not a thing because I do not care. I haven't seen any of these movies. I watch reruns of movies from the 90s and the early 2000s. So, congratulations. Happy for your success.
It's funny because this is not a thing for me for the exact same reason. Like, these kind of movies, I've never really been into. I've seen a couple of the Batman movies, and they were fine. I saw an Iron Man movie, but this is not must-see. I have to go out and watch this. So it's not a thing for me either, JP, for the same reason.
When I saw this yesterday, I wanted to pose it to you guys because I'd had conversations with Dylan Tyre and Nate Puderball on the Saturday Spectacular, and then last week talked with Matty Ice about getting pre-sale tickets for the Odyssey. And I think the numbers for Avengers early are beating what the Odyssey did in pre-sales. And I didn't think that was a thing. So I just learned about this last week.
Interesting.
Where we're talking about pre-sales because, and this is me being my parents, I'm just going to watch it when it comes out.
There you go.
I've got the streamers. I can't do the, I don't know the last time I saw a Marvel film in theaters. It might have been Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah. This Odyssey thing is a little bit insane. I'm learning a lot about movie screens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That I didn't know.
Had no idea existed. There were so many variations and sizes of movie screens.
I had learned a little bit more last week because Christopher Nolan wanted to do a 3+ hour Odyssey. But because IMAX cameras can't do more than 3 hours, he had to shave it to 2 hours and 52 minutes.
You know what the deal with that is, right?
Still too long for me.
So a lot of the guys who worked on those cameras and developed technology or whatever, they're either gone, retired, or they're gone, mm-hmm. gone. And the supply chain to get the parts needed if you need to repair these things, like, it's almost non-existent. And so they're basically like, we need the least amount of stress on these machines in our operation as possible, which is crazy.
I know for movie enthusiasts, Gateway at Ohio State's campus has a 70mm version they're showing. And then the 70mm IMAX, which I'm told is for cinephiles out there, is the thing, is over in Indianapolis. And I saw a video of them taking the reel of film out of the truck with one of those pallet jacks and then having to just send it through so many different film spools to get it to project is wild. But yeah, I guess, look, we're just trying to teach you guys.
Why would you produce a movie like that?
Because you can.
I know. Come on, man.
I mean, I'll give Christopher Nolan credit because it's not a CGI slop fest. I'll do that, right? Maybe you're going to get a lot of CGI for Avengers. I know the Avatar movies is like all CGI. Here's
CGI
what you can do with computers. Like, good on you, Christopher Nolan. The 20 most interesting programs today centers on the Miami Hurricanes. Some are saying the U is back. We'll discuss that next. Bishop and Friends on
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. Ohio State's looking for a big boom this afternoon. Five-star running back David Gabriel George, the second highest-ranked running back in the class of 2027, will reportedly choose between Ohio State and Tennessee on YouTube tonight at 5:30. Buckeyes currently have the seventh highest-ranked class in the 27th cycle. In baseball, the Reds look to make it 2 straight against the Mariners in Seattle today at 3:40. The Cleveland Guardians look for their third win in a row. They'll host the Minnesota Twins tonight at 6:40. Guardians are currently tied with the White Sox for the top spot in the American League Central. Baseball's trade deadline is Monday, August 3rd at 6 p.m. And Major League Soccer is back from the World Cup break. The Columbus Crew host NYCFC tonight at 7:30. FC Cincinnati's in town on Saturday for the first leg in the Hell is Real Derby. This update's sponsored by Vermeer Heartland. Vermeer Heartland opens in Columbus August 3rd. Get the Vermeer equipment you trust, genuine parts, and expert service. Visit VermeerHL.com.
Keep your friends close and your producers closer. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Yes, you are. Eric Reeser, Joshua Perry, Ryan Baker with you on this first Friday edition of the program. Baker's got his vacation officially endorsed coming at the end of the program today. Our 20 most interesting programs heads to Coral Gables with the question that's been asked since the dawn of time, Joshua, is the U back?
We'll expand conferences, we'll expand the playoffs, but we'll never, ever expand our interests. Bishop and Friends present the 20 most interesting programs.
Some are saying yes. The Hurricanes last season made it to the national championship game.
Who are the some?
I would be one of the some.
They're back. Like back.
The U is back.
That's an interesting take out of you.
I think if you are able to make a national championship game and bounce back with one of the best players in the country, or a couple of the best offensive players in the country, you're able to get a quarterback out of the transfer portal. You've got NIL spending that rivals some of the best in the country. You're throwing reportedly $10 million at Jeremiah Smith.
Mm-hmm.
That's back as the Miami Hurricanes ever hope to be.
Remember when Tom Herman said, you know, who was the quarterback who said Texas is back? Remember that during the Tom Herman days? It wasn't him, but it was his quarterback. I can't remember. It was Sam Ellinger, maybe? Who said that after they won a bowl game?
That was Texas, and we're back.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, Texas. Right? So, were they back, though? Like, I feel like back needs to be a couple more years of a similar result to last year. I'm not there yet.
Okay. That's fair. If you want to be a Miami hater, I fully understand that.
I'm not hating. I'm just trying to be...
In all seriousness, I think you can't be back until you win a national championship.
Down the middle.
If you're looking to be back like the Miami program wants to be, like Sam Ellinger was hoping it would lead Texas, you got to win a title. And they got, outside of Stetson Bennett, some of the best quarterback play for the one of the unlikeliest quarterbacks in college football playoff history last season than Carson Beck. Like, he played out of his mind in games. And for Carson Beck, from what we consider to be him, the guy that was supposed to be before he left Georgia,
Protected the football.
First-round NFL draft pick.
Used his legs a little bit. Was efficient running that offense. I'll give that to you. I liked him.
I think that's an interesting statement because it's just how quick we dismiss players. Because Carson Beck, as you mentioned, was a guy who was supposed to be the first number one pick in the draft at one time. Highly recruited out of Georgia. Won a lot of games for Georgia. And then he goes to Miami. You know, it didn't work out a little bit for him. We just dismiss guys so quick. Like, to me, that Carson Beck run wasn't that surprising because he had proven that he could be a good college quarterback before.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the surprising thing was what he did with his legs. Maybe that's what we didn't see coming. But
that last Carson Beck year
from that
at Georgia,
run.
Though, like that last year was miserable. He could not throw it to his team. Unfortunately for him, this is not his fault. When he did, they couldn't catch the ball.
Yeah.
So I get how people were super out on the Carson Beck experience, but he fixed the turnover issues. He was efficient. I don't know if he did anything that was, you know, super noteworthy except for really good quarterbacking, which is always noteworthy.
Right. Like, he did enough to keep them. I mean, there was at times I'm like, shoot, Miami might win this thing.
Yeah.
The game against Indiana, certainly. Against Ohio State,
yeah.
You know, it does help to have the defense that the Canes had last season. I think that's going to be the biggest thing, where you lose a pair of players on your defensive front that were all world. I mean, Reuben Bain, Akeem Mesidor, at one point in the game against Ohio State, were lined up on the same side of the ball, and I'm like, you've got to call a timeout. And I'm a layperson. Like, I would hope somebody would have seen that and be like, yeah, you got to not run that play. And they did, and you saw what happened. So that's, for me, the biggest question for Miami, because I think Darian Mentz is a solid quarterback. I thought Carson Beck was a stinky quarterback. And so I think this is an upgrade for what Mensa was able to do last season at Duke. Malachi Toney, Mark Fletcher, like, this is an offense that, and look, winning the ACC is not the toughest road to hoe.
But they've never done nothing. It since they've gotten into the conference.
So that's the expectation for me. And Mario Cristobal in his fifth season in Coral Gables, 97-79. You know, this lines up for Miami to make another college football playoff run.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think when you look at the inputs, to your point, Darian Mensa was very good. He's on his third stop now, but was good at Tulane, was good at Duke, who's in the ACC. And by the way, did you hear what he had to say about being at Duke versus Miami? He said at ACC Media Days that he felt like there was a little bit of angst in the locker room because of how much money he was making while he was at Duke. But he got to Miami and it felt like a family. Nobody cared. And one of the Duke players that was at ACC Media Day said that's just not true. And so that's an interesting thing. Neither here nor there. He's a good player. Malachi Toney, obviously one of the best players in college football. Mark Fletcher Jr.
Yeah.
I don't know if he gets enough credit for how good of a running back he's been during his career there at Miami. They've got a couple of guys in particular on the defensive interior that I think can be a real problem too. So, yeah, they got the inputs there. It's just like, can you run it back at the same level you did a year ago?
You know, I see on this returning starters list, Xavier Lucas, I think he had an interception in the national championship. At least he had an interception in the playoff, but he was the guy that just left Wisconsin.
Yeah, he said, all right, did the ghost transfer, which is what they call that.
It's a very Miami thing to do.
It's going to be interesting to see, because we talk about the two guys they lost on the defensive side of the ball in Mezidor and Bain, but they only have one returning offensive lineman coming back and just three starters on the offensive side of the ball totally. And if you remember those tackles, one of them was Francis Maui'oa, who's going to be playing for the Cleveland Browns this year. And the other one was Markell Bell, who some people thought would be better than he was in college. Like, some people thought that was a guaranteed first-round pick at one point. But he's still a monster of a human.
Yeah, he's like 6'8",
6'9", 360 pounds. Yeah. So that offensive line, and I know Mensah's really good running the football from the quarterback spot. That offensive line is real, and that's what Cristobal does. He's a former offensive lineman. That offensive line has a lot of work that needs to be done.
And so to help shore up the left side, you got big Jackson Cantwell out of high school. He was that 6'8", 330-pound lineman that they paid a bunch of money to.
And well,
it's an ambitious play when you've got arguably one of your most important pieces. You're trying to replace an all-conference, all-American, and you're going to do it with a guy out of high school that took the bag. I've maintained that the most ambitious thing you can do in college is the quarterback portaling year after year after year. This might be the second most ambitious thing from a player personnel standpoint.
Yeah, I don't love throwing a freshman out there and saying, like, go be great.
There you go.
But again, like, I don't, who knows? They might have a guy who they felt like was a developmental player who will be ready to go sooner than a freshman would be. As we've mentioned, Mario is really good at his craft of being an offensive line coach. I think he's become a much better head coach. We'll talk about that in the next segment. But he's going to make sure that the offensive line does not embarrass him. Like, that is his one goal as a coach, is y'all got to be really good, because that's my thing.
He certainly made Oregon tougher up front. Did the same thing with Miami. Now, the Canes, I don't think, left Florida until November of last season. It was something ridiculous where they went more than a third of their way through the schedule without leaving the Sunshine State. They're going to be leaving the Sunshine State at times this season. I want to say they've got Stanford in Stanford week one. This is, if you want to talk about cupcakes, Stanford, Florida A&M, Wake Forest, Central Michigan, Clemson, Florida State, Pittsburgh, North Carolina, the Notre Dame one on November 7th. That'll be at 7:30 on your network, NBC.
That's right. Yes, sir.
That'll be a hell of a game. Those will be when, I think it's August 17th is the preseason top 25. Both will have single digits next to their names.
I think that three-week run there, starting with that Notre Dame game for them, is going to be tough, because they're at Notre Dame. Then they play Duke, and there's already something there, JP. You talked about it. Mensah and the wide receiver both transfer from Duke, go to Miami. You know Duke's going to be fired up for that. And if you remember, Duke won the ACC last year, so they weren't a terrible football team. And then Virginia Tech, and I think Virginia Tech is going to be much improved with Mr. James Franklin as their head coach. So I think that three-week run is a little tough for them.
I agree with you on the Va Tech. I'm not sure what their record will be, but I think that they'll be able to hit the ground running with James Franklin.
Alex Dono will be our guest at 11:30. He hosts the Locked On Canes podcast. He also hosts the Locked On ACC podcast, and so he'll have plenty of thoughts on not only the Miami Hurricanes, but I'm interested to hear his thoughts on ACC Media Days last week and James Franklin's introduction to that conference. But we will do the categories in the Miami Hurricanes coming up next. It's Bishop and Friends on
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service, because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
The Fan have created a show where you can be a homer, a hater, or whatever you want to be. Sunday mornings at 8.
It's the Fan Call-In Show, presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Columbus.
Must be 21. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-589-9966.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We're looking good out there for the rest of the day. Plentiful sunshine. No real mugginess and high temperatures in the mid-70s. Looks like the coolest afternoon we've had in about a month. For tomorrow, we start off in the mid-50s with a mostly clear sky. Mostly sunny skies into the afternoon with highs in the upper 70s. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan.
They've all been paid by the Cleveland Browns. This is Bishop and Friends.
That's not entirely accurate. Just two of us. Eric Reese or Ryan Baker. That we know of, Joshua. I don't think you've received a check.
Nope.
Would you like to?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. That's fair. Alex Dono will join us.
Hold on.
I usually don't turn down checks.
Their money spins the same as everybody
it does,
else's.
But
if I'd asked you 10 years ago, I'm sure you'd have a different answer.
Yeah, it but would now, have been a different answer. Here's the thing. I give Tyvus all the credit in the world. I'm not making the commute. That to me, I'm cool on.
Well, technology's allowed him now. Oh, on Sundays, yeah. You're right. He's still having to do that.
Yeah, I'm good.
Not driving to Cleveland to hear from Dick from Dayton.
I mean, just be burning up gas and putting wear and tear and miles on my vehicle.
He puts miles on Cardell's vehicle.
It's true.
It's a different car. If you want to hear Browns football, we'll have it for you on The Fan. So hear Tyvus.
I'll listen.
In his post-game conversations with Dick and Dayton. And
listen to him do the draft. It was very good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Cleveland Browns football, and Cleveland Browns football will be right here on The Fan in the fall. The University of Miami, the 20 most interesting programs today. We'll hit the categories on the Canes. Hail to the spirit of Miami U. The fight song.
I feel about this fight song the way you felt about Notre Dame's. I could go without this one.
It's fine.
Doesn't really do it for me.
I can tell you this, hearing it this morning again, I had a little PTSD from the college football playoff.
You heard a lot then.
Didn't like it. Didn't like it much then. Didn't like it a lot this morning.
If I haven't said it in the last 5 minutes, Alex Dono of Locked On Canes will join us in 10 minutes to cover Miami football and expectations for Mario Cristobal as he enters year 5 in Coral Gables. For this Miami Hurricane squad, the CFB 2026 adaptability grade, Joshua.
It's an A. It's Miami. People want to be down there. They're around a lot of guys. They can give them to stay home. They've been spending money. They've spent money for as long as anybody in collegiate athletics has spent money. So they've got that part figured out. The only thing that's tough is the stadium situation. That's hard. But they will travel to the stadium. Students will when the team is good. So I think I'd give them an A.
Yeah, it's hard to not give a team that played in the college football national championship game last year an A and say they're not sticking up with the time, keeping up with the times and all of that. So definitely an A here.
Yeah, it's an A. And the stadium thing, I think to your point, as long as they win, they're not going to have a serious problem with it. But if they get into a slump, that thing's going to be empty. And it's 45 minutes from campus isn't where you want to put things. But for a place like Miami, it's kind of where it's all we got. Uniform brand grade for the Miami Hurricanes, Joshua.
The brand is definitely an A+. I think it's a cool place for people to want to go. The U kids have been throwing that up forever. All of the kids who grow up in Miami playing football, like that's the thing that they want to do. People know it nationally. So A+ there. Uniforms have gotten better, but there was a point where I was given those uniforms an F. I didn't like some of the combinations that they had. I didn't like the design of the uniform. Now they've kind of leaned into more of the old school look, the stripe on the sleeve that they've brought back, the old school looking numeral. I think that I would give them a B+ to an A there. So as a combination, I'm rocking with an A.
So the brand is an A+. I mean, their brand is just the U, and that's pretty darn cool. It may not be cool if you're a rival of them or if they've beaten you, but the branding is an A+. I think the helmet is an A. I think the uniforms, the rest of the uniform, I'd probably give it a B.
Yeah, it's a B+, because I think the brand is as hot as any in college football right now, but Yeah, the uniforms, when you add in, they're just fine, in my opinion. Would all-star quarter, I don't know, let's go historical player you'd pick for this Miami team.
So I'm going to go with Ray Lewis on this one. And I think their linebackers are going to be fine, but I think that they would, with some of the departures and the secondary, with the departures on the edges, I think that you would like a real commanding linebacker there in the middle of the defense. Maybe, and no shade here, but maybe not a player who's been in college for 8 years. Like, I think I'm going with Ray Lewis.
So when I first started this, I thought pass rusher, because they obviously just lost two great ones. And then I was looking into their history. They actually don't have a ton of really great pass rushers outside of the two that they just had in Bain and Mezador. So then I was just thinking defensive player, and I thought Ray Lewis. But the more I looked into this, give me Bryant McKinney. Give me the guy that won the Outland Trophy. Give me the guy that didn't allow a sack in his career at the U. Give me the guy that's going to replace Malioa or Markel Bell, whoever. So give me the big offensive tackle.
It's probably the best place to go in terms of up front, and you want to have a big physical offensive line. I'm going to pick Sean Taylor, though.
Yeah.
And I'm going to give him the visor.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say that's one of the cooler looks, and he's one of the best college football players of all time.
He couldn't play in this era.
Well, he'd certainly be missing some games and some halves of games.
Yeah.
But if he's back there, you're taking note. I mean, I just thought so much of him, and
me too.
I'll reference this when I talk about the sliding door moment when Maurice Clarett strips him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that moment is one of the all-time college football moments for me because of how much respect I had for Sean Taylor, and obviously he's got, you know, a statue and one of the greatest football players, you know, of at least the last 50 years. So it could be pretty great as long as he just kept his head up.
Yeah.
Would they get an official visit from Vince Howard?
Sure. I don't see why they wouldn't.
Yeah, this is an A-plus grade here. Absolutely. He's going to go check out what's going on in South Beach.
Yeah, I think they'd offer him, and he would definitely want to see. Because I think if South Florida's calling from, what, West Texas, you're probably interested. Probably very interested. Coach grade for Mario Cristobal.
I'm going to go with the B-plus here. The culture of this team shows up on their tape, which I think is very important. He has become a better game manager, but I still feel like you have that part of your stomach where it's like, is Mario going to Mario? Are they going to try to run a play instead of taking a knee? I think that still lives with you. But a natty appearance and everything seems to be pointing in the right direction. Like, I'm not sure I would say that he's in the A tier of coaches, but he's butting up against it.
So I am giving this a B minus because I think Mario Cristobal is a heck of a player's coach. I think he is a great rah-rah guy. I think he's an offensive line coach, so he knows to build from the trenches out. But his head coaching record isn't that great compared to some of the other upper echelon coaches. And his head coaching record is at Oregon and Miami, two pretty big time programs. And there are too many instances, JP, as you talked about, where he has just done some of the dumbest, most asinine things you have ever seen a coach do late in games or in critical situations. So I just don't trust him, quite frankly. And maybe I'm a little low on this because they just went to a national title game, but he's a B minus for me.
I'm going to give him a B. I think there's that
split the difference.
Certainly that Georgia Tech game two seasons ago will forever haunt him and that team. But last season, the way Mario Cristobal has been able to at Miami kind of cobble together teams year in and year out and still recruit talent and still, and it remains to be seen how well they can develop that talent for the next level. But you get the portal backs are going to be a big question, I think. And can you continue that success? Kind of what Kurt Cignetti has done at Indiana, certainly Miami trying to go in that path. Sliding door moment in Hurricanes football history.
So I think a lot of people could make the argument that Ohio State broke them. You mentioned the play there. It was ridiculous what Maurice did, but I'll take it a little bit further. I think it was really the handoff between Coker to Randy Shannon in the ACC transition happening around that time, a little bit before the handoff. They haven't been the same since that point. And they're trying to get back there, but it's just not what the U was.
I think you could argue in a negative way that sliding door moment would have been Butch Davis to Larry Coker, even though they went to that national title game against Ohio State with Larry Coker. He took what had been built and kind of torpedoed it. I'm going to go sliding door moment in a good way. I think it was from the hiring of Howard Schnellenberger in the late 70s through the 80s and 90s, because that put the U on the map. They were an independent then, and that got them on the road to being in the Big East and then the ACC. So I'm going to take it from a positive aspect and say Schnellenberger through the 80s and 90s was...
I'm going to go with the 2003 Fiesta Bowl. The 0-2 national championship game, the pass interference call that Miami fans bitched about for 15, 20 years.
Still
to this day. And that program completely fell off a cliff following that game. And yeah, the coaching hires were not, they were really awful. And it led to not great football on the field. And this now, they're kind of getting back to it, where it is, I think, fair to even ask that question. Despite it's a tongue-in-cheek thing I love to ask, is the U back? Now you can legitimately have that conversation. Yeah,
it's in the conversation, no doubt.
Alex Dono will join us in 2 minutes. He covers the Miami Hurricanes for the Locked On Hurricanes podcast. Bishop and Friends on the
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Sports conversation that's worthy of a toast, or at least a stiff drink. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Yes, you are. Eric Reeser, Joshua Perry, Ryan Baker with you on a first Friday edition of the program. The 2026 Miami Hurricanes look to summit college football's mountaintop and a return appearance in the college football national championship game. For some perspective, we've gotten out of the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems fan guest hotline. He's the host of the Locked On Canes and the Locked On ACC podcast. He's Alex Dono. Alex, we appreciate the time today. Before we get into a conversation about this current Hurricanes roster, I want to go back to ACC Media Days last week and just comments by Jim Phillips, the conference commissioner, have me wondering what the health of the league is and where do you see the Atlantic Coast Conference in the next 5 years?
Oh, well, in the next 5 years, that's tough. You know, the commissioner would never admit this because he has to portray strength, right? That's a big job when you're a conference commissioner. But I wonder if in 5 years, if the ACC exists in its current form or if it even exists at all. And I say that because, you know, there's a lot of, I think, renewed pressure on conference realignment with, you know, this legislation that's still, you know, not really imminent to be passed. But this Protect College Sports Act that they're looking at has a lot of language in it about conference realignment or how they want to limit it and stop it. And I know the SEC and the Big Ten are trying to get that language out of there completely. If they can't, then there's some rumors they could try to expand earlier so they get it in before expansion is no longer legal. I think it's no secret Florida State and Clemson have been open to leaving in the past. They sued the ACC over the grant of rights. There's been a lot of smoke about Miami being open to leaving for the right opportunity, North Carolina, possibly Duke because of their strength of basketball. So, yeah, I think right now the ACC is in a spot of just at this very moment a decent amount of harmony. Miami certainly benefited from the ACC going to an uneven revenue distribution. No other conference does that, where if you make a playoff run, you get to keep all of your extra playoff revenue. You get to keep some extra TV revenue that you make. So I think most members of the ACC are relatively happy at this moment. But within the next few years, if the SEC and Big Ten start looking to shake things up, then I think we could see a lot of chaos reemerge.
Alex, looking at the ACC on the field this year, who do you think will be the biggest challengers to Miami?
I think I look at SMU first and foremost. And, you know, obviously SMU won a head-to-head against Miami and Dallas last year. They actually do not play one another in the regular season this year. So SMU and Miami would not potentially see each other until the ACC championship game SMU, they're very well coached by Rhett Lashley. They have a really good quarterback, Kevin Jennings, who's going to be in his third year in that offense. So he's good, plus the continuity. Their offensive line is one of the better units in the ACC. So I feel like SMU has the recipe to do that this year. I think Louisville is probably the next team up for me. You know, they have more questions at quarterback because Lincoln Keenholz, the Ohio State transfer, was obviously a backup at Ohio State. Doesn't have a lot of experience, but he is dynamic from all accounts. But kind of, you know, how he makes an immediate impact will have a big factor on them. And then I think the other team that I'm going to view as a contender until proven otherwise, guys, would be Clemson. You know, I have a lot of questions about their quarterback position because Chris Vezina doesn't seem to get rave reviews, and a lot of folks feel like Dabo Swinney probably should have gone into the portal to get a new quarterback, but he's Dabo, so he made a point not to do that. I just think Clemson overall has, I would say, the second most talented roster in the ACC behind Miami, but can they put it together at quarterback this year? And Clemson and Miami do play head-to-head this year in October. Miami has to go to Death Valley, which is going to be a huge game. And so I kind of view those four, with Miami included. I think there are other teams that could be potential dark horses, like Virginia Tech with James Franklin and all their new players. And, you know, Pittsburgh is always really tough on defense, and Mason Heinschel's a good quarterback. But I kind of look at SMU, Louisville, and Clemson as being the biggest threats overall.
Alex, I'm going to switch it up just to Miami now. Coming off of that national title game appearance, they lose two great defensive ends and pass rushers in Bain and Mesidor, though. But they're also replacing four guys on the offensive line, including two pretty good tackles in Maioa and Bell. What's the bigger concern for you, the pass rush or protecting the passer?
I think protecting the passer. And I say that because on the pass rush side of it, I think the replacements are a little bit more proven. If you start on the defensive line, you know, Miami went out and grabbed Damon Wilson in the transfer portal, former Mizzou and Georgia defensive end, who had a really productive season at Mizzou last year with 9 sacks and 54 pressures in the SEC. Now he gets to go up against ACC offensive lines, which in theory could be a little bit easier for him. And a couple of the guys that were backing up Bain and Mesidor last year were really high on down in South Florida, especially Armando Blunt, who is, he could be, and you know, I hate to even, like, I'm not comparing them directly, but it, body type wise could be another Reuben Bain. I don't want to put any unfair comparisons on Blunt, but he's 275 pounds and he can play inside or outside on the defensive line. Marquise Lightfoot had a really good year playing primarily behind Mesidor last year. And Miami's defensive tackles are really good. They have continuity there from last year, bringing back Ahmad Moten Sr. and Justin Scott. So I think the defensive line is a little bit more proven. It's always tough to replace generational guys like Bain and Mesidor, but I think they have the horses to do it. I think it's going to be a little bit more of a rotation at defensive end this year because Bain and Mesidor didn't leave the field a whole lot last year, but I think they can handle that. On the offensive line, they have the talent and they have the coaching, but there are more questions because a lot of the new projected starters are going to be younger, inexperienced guys. For example, I at this point, based on what I saw in spring ball, I would be shocked if true freshman Jackson Cantwell wasn't a starter at his first year. He was the top recruit in the country in the class of 2026, and he was getting most of the prominent reps at left tackle in spring, which is exciting and a little scary at the same time to think that your starting left tackle might be a true freshman. Now, he's obviously built different than most true freshmen, but he's got to try to gain that comfort and experience there. And someone I project to probably be a starter at guard is a second-year guy. Not sure if he's technically a redshirt freshman or a sophomore, if those labels even matter anymore. I don't know. But Max Buchanan is another one who's a younger guy who practices well, but not a whole lot of experience. One thing I think that works out favorably for Miami's offensive line this year is, unlike last year, where Miami played a top 10 opponent in Notre Dame right out the gate, Miami doesn't really face any significantly difficult opposition until more than a month into the season this year. And they do play Notre Dame again this year, but that's not till November. So the Hurricanes are going to have, like, in the first five or six games, opportunities for the new offensive line to build some chemistry. Because, again, the talent is there. There's just not nearly as much experience on that unit as there was last year.
Alex Dono is our guest. Grab the Locked On Canes and Locked On ACC podcast, wherever it is you do your podcasting. At quarterback for the Hurricanes, the Mensa man comes down from Duke. Alex, did Miami upgrade at quarterback from Carson Beck?
Yes, I believe they did. Carson Beck, who obviously had a very good season at Miami. I mean, you don't get to the national title game if he didn't have a good season, but we also saw some of his limitations in play throughout the year. I view and continue to view Beck as a very high floor guy, but I think Darian Mensah's ceiling is significantly higher. He's more athletic. He's more bold at taking shots down the field. Mensah at Duke last year attempted more deep balls of 20 or more yards than any other quarterback in the country. And while doing that, he only threw six interceptions all year to 34 touchdowns, which I think played very favorably for him. I think Mensah gives you just more options to run more RPO. You know, I was watching Mensah throughout spring ball at Miami. He goes through his progressions well. You know, he obviously loves to attack down the field, but he's not shy about taking checkdowns if necessary. I just think Mensah has significantly more upside than Carson Beck. Now, maybe the floor could be a little lower while the ceiling is significantly higher, but I think Miami almost definitely upgraded at quarterback.
Alex, I said this earlier in the program, but in a season where Indiana was your conference and national championship, the follow-up season, I guess anything can happen. So we look forward to the fun in the fall. Thanks so much for giving us some of your time this morning, bud.
Thank you. I can't wait for college football season. I love talking about it with you guys. Thank you for having me.
And again, there's Alex Dono. He runs the Locked On Canes and the Locked On ACC podcasts. Grab those wherever it is you do your podcast. You joined us courtesy the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems fan guest hotline. The Kansas City Chiefs have an announcement, and it's disappointing to say the least. We'll get that next. It's Bishop and Friends.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Football fall camp is coming. Will Julian Sain take his game to the next level? Will Matt Patricia's defense dominate again? Join us live for training camp fun starting Thursday, August 6th. Your home of the Buckeyes. The Fan.
The Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by Federal Elite Heating and Cooling and Bryant. Doing whatever it takes to keep you and your home comfortable. The Fan.
The uncle you never knew you had.
The friends you kind of wish you didn't. This is Bishop and Friends.
Yes, it is. Uncle Bo's out in Montana, hopefully not getting thrown in the air by bison.
Well,
if you see those animals, avoid them. Don't be taking pictures. Don't be trying to pet them, especially. Just go the other way.
Somebody told me if they were walking that trail, they would have done it with a shotgun strapped to their chest.
Well, I certainly couldn't put it against them, but it, you know, a national park, I don't know if they let you.
I don't think they would either, like, but I understand that mentality.
Yeah, I do too.
Because it's a national park, like, yep. Things are bound to happen.
That video, because that kind of happened last week when I was on vacation, that was one of the craziest things you've ever seen. And you just wonder, like, that bison was just rolling around, enjoying playing. Like, what was it that he saw? Did he just see them for the first time, or what was it that was like, "Welp, I gotta go"?
The guy was wearing some nasty aftershave or something.
They stood around a little too long, I think.
I'm not.
It's tough because that animal, when it charges at you, is probably running a 4.5 40.
I enjoy animals, but not enough to be that close to one that's not in some sort of enclosure.
Reportedly, he's doing well though, so he's healing up.
Good.
The Daily Fan poll, sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub, asks, is the risk of an early season loss worth the reward of a marquee non-conference victory for Ohio State and Texas? 89% say yes. And I'm thrilled that's where we're going. Because yes, I agree.
I wish the decision makers in the sport would agree with this too, because they all lied to us If you remember, they said, oh, yeah, we'll expand this thing and you guys will have more leeway.
Marquee matchups.
Yeah, and we'll get better games out of it. And everybody has literally said, actually, we're going to give you worse games with more access.
Yeah. So that's flying in the face of, well, actually, that, I don't know where it is on the scale of, you get SEC coaches this week, 9 conference games, the toughest in the country, boo the Big Ten for doing Power 4 or for doing no Power 4 in your non-conference. And then Nick Saban today saying, I just want to play 12 Power 5 games. I want to do 12 games as hard as humanly possible, plus your 9, with your 9 conference games and your conference championships.
There you go, Nick.
Pretty easy to say that when you're sitting on the set of College Game Day and not on the sidelines.
We do have an officially endorsed to get to before 3 things.
Bishop and Friends present First Friday. Officially endorsed. Because everyone deserves 2 Fridays.
You drink for the wrong reasons. My generation, we drink because it's good. Because it feels better than unbuttoning your collar. Because we deserve it. We drink because it's what men do.
So this might be the most boring First Friday ever, but Reese, you said you wanted to know what the drink situation was on vacation and what the best drink that I had was on vacation. Well, I didn't go too crazy with drinks on vacation as far as mixing it up much. So when I'm drinking for the long term, like an all day at the beach or all day on the golf course, my go-to is a classic Captain and Coke. So that's what I did all week. I filled the tumbler up with ice. I filled it then about a quarter or a third of the way with Captain, then threw some Coke on top, and then I just sipped on those all day. And then at nighttime, when it was like, okay, all the festivities are done, I went out on the balcony, threw about 4 ice cubes in a glass, poured a nice bourbon over top, and sat there and listened to the ocean and the waves, and away we go. So that was my week. It was a First Friday every day last week.
While you say the drink is simple, I think the picture you just painted, though, is something that we all want.
I agree.
It's the ambiance. It's the surrounding. It's the situational beverage and something that you enjoy. There's nothing better than the thing that you enjoy. You don't need to make it. You don't need to make it anything more than the simple ingredients that make a vacation a vacation.
One, two, three things.
Sponsored by Newman Roofing. For all your roofing, gutter, or siding needs, call Newman Roofing today at 614-NEW-ROOF or visit online at newmanroofing.com.
Yeah, I had forgotten to do officially endorsed. So I was reading the fan poll in the back of my head, and this is going to be my first thing. I was like, what am I forgetting? Because I knew there was something on a First Friday, something very important, something to the heart of this program that I was forgetting, and I'm thrilled. So I'm going to pat myself on the back for, of the things that I did okay today, this, that I did not forget the officially endorsed on a First Friday. Nice job, Eric.
Good job out of you.
Thanks.
As Uncle Bo would say.
Great job I did.
All right. My first thing, I know people have been looking at the fallout from the ESPN layoffs, and there's a lot of commentary to be had. This, to me, is reflective of where we're at in society, in the sense that there's a disappearing middle class. And I think for those of us who grew up watching ESPN, we certainly appreciated the stars, but there were a lot of people there who were like kind of in that middle tier at ESPN that just did a great job of making the productions that we watched awesome. And then you had kind of like the rank and file people that would work there. Well, now it's all superstars, and then it's kind of the rank and file employee. And I think it's a very disappointing thing because a lot of people have put in a lot of work in this business just to be able to get to a kind of prominent spot at a place like that, and the opportunities are disappearing. So as we're having commentary about this, I just want to make sure it's centered on a lot of really good people who are working hard in these businesses that are seeing fewer opportunities today.
My first thing, saw this today, and I am by no means a Cincinnati Bengals fan, but I saw that they are inducting James Brooks and Bob Trumpy into their Ring of Honor and their home game against the Titans on November 1st. I don't remember Bob Trumpy very much as a player at all, but I remember him from his days as a doing what we do, talking on the radio on 700 WLW and all the things that he did and said on Cincinnati radio when I would be tuning into that around Reds games growing up. And probably the first running back I actually remember for the Cincinnati Bengals was James Brooks. And he was a guy that was kind of ahead of his time, maybe a little slight for a running back, but could catch the ball out of the backfield just as well as he could run. And I've heard the same thing about Trumpy, that as a tight end, he was a little ahead of his time. I feel like this is overdue for both, so good job by the Cincinnati Bengals.
So second thing for me, the Kansas City Chiefs unveiled their $3 billion stadium. The plans were released by Adam Schefter, and then the Chiefs had to write up themselves. And the new renderings make it look like every other new NFL stadium outside of the one in Minneapolis. And I was a little disappointed seeing that because it just doesn't feel like there's any creativity in it. But Joshua, in the break, you were quick to tell me that they don't care.
I don't think they do.
Yeah.
As long as people are comfortable in buying tickets still.
Yeah, don't care.
We're so romantic about it as people who love college football. The NFL people don't care about that. My second thing, be careful with AI and maybe some people in your life, younger people in particular, using it. Saw a story about this woman who was going through some sort of psychosis, who was chatting with AI, and it got to a very dark place, and the AI chatbot encouraged some behaviors that led to her demise. And it's just, we've said this about technology from its inception, really, but just be very careful about how people in your lives who might be unknowing or naive are utilizing technology.
Second thing for me, and Reese, you brought this up in one of your updates earlier about only four pitchers, I think, in baseball have 12 wins, and one of them is Chase Burns. So sitting there watching a little bit of that game last night and watching Chase Burns pitch, it reminded me that the Reds signed him to a contract extension last week. 7 years, $105 million. That is very un-Cincinnati Reds-like. And it makes me very happy because I was convinced that Chase Burns was on his way to the New York Yankees in the not-so-distant future. So it makes me very happy to see my team actually make a wise move and spend some money.
There's hope for the Cincinnati Reds. No time for a third thing from all of us. Just want to wish you a wonderful afternoon as Rothman and Ice are coming up next. Joshua Baker, myself, will be back tomorrow, 9 to noon, Bishop and Friends.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.